Welcome to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Suntress, and welcome to part one of the Bendis Tapes, the Winter 2007 edition. This episode of Word Balloon is sponsored by InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com. InStock Trades offers a huge selection of trade paperbacks, hardcovers, essentials, showcases, archives, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more, all at up to 35% off with orders over $50 receiving free shipping. Plus, check out Bendis' Powers and Daredevil trade paperbacks. And don't forget to visit InStock Trade's sister site, Discount Book Service, at dcbservice.com for all your pre-order needs. Major publishers are 40% off, and monthly specials are 45 to 75% off every month. March pre-orders include Bendis' Powers Volume 11 for 50% off and the first issue of DC's new Countdown Weekly Series for 75% off. Only 74 cents for Countdown number 51. Visit InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com and Discount Comic Book Service at DCBService.com. Last week, Brian Bendis and I spent 3 days and 6 hours talking. As usual, the current edition of the Bendis Tapes provides clues to Marvel storylines and character futures for the next few months. The trick is finding it amidst random pop culture thoughts and subjects from Bendis, myself, and the questions that inspire the entire conversation, provided by members of Brian's message board at jinxworld.com. To read along with Brian and myself, there's a link in the show information slug at wordballoon.com, myspace.com/wordballoon, and all the podcatcher sites.
You're like my summer camp girlfriend that I like at the end of the summer, I can't wait to get ready, and then, you know, the winter comes and I miss you.
I like when you email me. I know you miss me. I miss you.
Yeah, it's, hey, dude, we're at like 150 questions. Can we do this? Yeah, not right now. I'm having my upper plate fixed.
Yeah, that and I'm shooting that fraction on a Lost Planet. That's much very important.
Yeah, I can appreciate that. That's okay. Are you going to Italy?
I'm going to Italy in a couple of weeks, yeah.
Is that for a con?
A convention, flying the family out.
I've
never met Gabriel Del Odo, even though we did a huge book together. So, this should be fun.
That's outstanding, man.
Yeah, that's very nice. Going to Rome, Milan.
Because
it's fashion week, so I have a handful.
So you're going to do any scouting while you're there?
Yeah, I always am. Always looking.
That's cool.
I was looking for the next hot artist and the next writer I can squash the dream.
Any opening comments for this round of the Bendis Tapes?
Very happy with the reaction to New Avengers 27 and Ultimate Spider-Man 105, and I thank you all for your support. That's very awesome.
Nice debut for the New Avengers.
Hey, yeah, Lanil's just the real deal, and what a pleasure to work with him, and it's kind of made a nice gentleman's commitment to each other, so I'm looking forward to what we do in the next couple of years. But I just can't believe how lucky I am to find someone like this again. I mean, I know a lot of my friends have collaboration horror stories, and I've just been really not having that many in comparison to the amount of people I work with. It really is amazing to find both me and Frank are just turning out to be just gentlemen and real artists, and it's really nice.
And before I forget, I want to go back a couple issues to your Scarlet Witch Hawkeye New Avengers issue. I guess only one issue back.
Yes.
And say how I really like Maleev's new style.
That's just the style for that issue. The style that he used for the confession, completely different.
Mm-hmm.
And he colored the first half of it himself, and it is gorgeous.
Very cool.
Yes, and our next project will have another style.
Spider-Woman
will have another style.
Okay. Oh, there's something in between.
There's a little something in between, which will be announced at New York Con.
Okay.
I cannot speak of it, but it's when people hear what it is, they go, oh, yeah, you had to do that first.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
All right. Without further ado,
yeah. It
is time for the February Bendis Tapes.
Yeah.
The AFNY guy asks, looking back on Ultimate Spider-Man, is there anything you would have changed or done differently? If so, what is it?
If I'd done differently, that's always a tough question, because if I felt I did it right, I probably would have stopped doing it. Like, that's what Woody Allen says, I keep making the same movie over and over again, because one day I'll get it right. But really, the only thing that's ever frustrated me, of all the books I've had the fortunate to be on, we had this area in the 80s, like, that we just could not find a good ink team-up for Mark, and the coloring, the inking and the coloring situation were lacking, And I'm not dissing the creators, because they're all good creators. It's just, you know, it's a specific matchup that has to happen.
Okay.
And they weren't just weren't doing Bagley justice in the pencils he was handing in. And we, thankfully for the Clone Saga, did find get it back. And I, the reaction to the book was genuinely higher because of it. So I feel kind of frustrated that I would do these pencils and that wouldn't, what was in the pencils wasn't getting to the final product. So, but we got it back. And I'm grateful that we have it back, and we're going to end on a high note with Bagley. But it did frustrate me while it was going on. Like, well, why can't we get this book, you know what I mean, to be the high-quality book? And it was
sure.
Very frustrating.
And preview on Stuart, how are things going?
Oh, the dazzling. He's got two issues in there to do already, and I gave him a difficult assignment on an ultimization of a Spider-Man villain, a very difficult thing to redesign. He handed in something truly outstanding that changed my opinion on what to do with the character. So I'm looking forward to this.
Alicia's Gimp asks, because I'm going to blow up Johnny's name.
Yeah, Blaine, go to hell, Blandy, and go to hell, Johnny.
Alicia's Gimp. Bendy, will we ever see a scene, a flashback or anything that showcases the moment where Jessica Jones realized that Spider-Man, her husband's teammate in the New Avengers, is Peter Parker, the dude she had a crush on in high school? Crush? I've been waiting for like a year to ask that question.
This will happen, yeah. This is having a New Avengers coming up.
Okay, very cool.
Yeah, it's written, I don't remember what it is. I'm way ahead on New Avengers. That was one of the pluses and minuses of Civil War, is that I was just writing and writing and writing, and months would go by without the book shipping, even though I was writing it, and then I just stopped writing it because I was like, all right, I'm way too ahead.
And Frank is just sitting there going, bigger tits, let me erase it again. Bigger tits.
How about some Tigra?
The Kraken, Bendis, my copy of Fire is the remastered trade, which says you redid all the lettering and much of the art. I think it's boxed. I'm moving. Sorry if I'm wrong. Have you ever had the urge to meddle with any of your work at all, George Lucas style? Changing some dialogue here, redraw a panel there, add some odious comic relief, etc. I read Neil Adams actually redrew some of the material in a recent collection of his Batman work. How do you feel about that kind of thing? The one thing Kix is really missing is giant spaceships, you know?
Yeah, hell yeah. But this is a good question. I think about it a lot, actually. Fire got remastered because I did like the book, but it had some real problems that were just based on the fact that I didn't even own a computer when I did it. I mean, just it was stuff that was unprofessional by any standard, and it was to be released just because it was cute that I didn't have a computer when I did it and I didn't have the tools to make a professional comic book doesn't excuse me trying to sell you a non-professional comic book. So I said, okay, if I'm going to put out Fire, it's got to be relettered, and you know what I mean? The mm-hmm. borders of the panels have to be restructured. So while all that was going on, you can't help but go through it and go, well, as long as I'm relettering it, I might as well do another dialogue polish because, you know, I got to reletter it anyhow. So I was able to tighten up some edges and clarify some points. Nothing that changed the crux of the story, but I just knew, okay, this thing cost $10, and I'd be very embarrassed to hand in something. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it ends up, of all the books, I think because there's a lower price point, it's got to be the second highest selling graphic novel I have. It's just, I mean, it's in like its 14th printing, for Christ's sake.
Wow. Seriously. That's awesome.
So I'm very glad I remastered it because it would have been very embarrassing to have that many people buy it and it not be, you know, professionally lettered. So, then you kind of, but by the time I started Goldfish and Jinx, or by the time they got into trade, I was lettering on computer and was able to put it together correctly. So I didn't need a remaster, but of course you do look back and all you can see is the mistakes and everything, but kind of let the work live on its own, and that's how I kind of lived with it for a few years.
Sure.
And then just a few months ago, I just finished the Jinx screenplay, and in doing so, a few years, a more mature writer, I figured out some things about the plot that I had not figured out in my previous version of the story in graphic novel form, and came up with a much better ending and a much better, like, third act.
Really?
And of something I liked more, and other people read it liked it more, and I got all excited about it, and it was actually even offered to me to maybe, I don't have time to draw it now, but maybe to redraw it, have it redrawn with the new storyline, kind of like when Hitchcock remade one of his own movies or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, you know what, now, maybe some other day, but not now. You got to look to the future. So I do think about it. It's a long, I'll just give you examples of how these things come about.
Will your Jinx, is your Jinx screenplay going to be the final screenplay?
I don't know. So
okay.
Far, no one has been hired to replace me, and they're making moves to put it together, and people are getting hired, so we'll see, but, you know.
No director attached yet?
There is a director involved. I don't know if he's officially attached, so
okay.
I'm not allowed to speak, but it is someone people would be pretty psyched about, I think.
Okay, with all the Zodiac previews.
It's the guy who directed Are We There Yet? No, I'm just joking.
I thought Johnson Family Picnic.
That guy. Not always good.
I every time I see a Zodiac preview, I think of Fincher and you, obviously. So
yeah, we're still a couple years away, but yeah, again, that one I don't have much to do with. So
okay.
That one I'm just doing an Alan Moore on and without the visiting. No, but the Jinx one I know went well because they offered me another gig afterwards. So I know they're sincere in their appreciation for the screenplay. So.
Very cool.
No writer's been hired past me, and we'll see if that continues. But again, not in my hands, so just do what I can and do my business and whatever.
Whatever.
Whatever, man.
Pat Loika. Hey, Brian. I love the concept of the Illuminati, particularly because I'm a fan of all the characters in the group.
Me too. Thank you.
Besides the obvious fact that they're all power players in the Marvel Universe, how'd you end up picking these particular characters for this group?
That one was, as you can imagine, one is the leader of the mutants, and one is kind of the leader of the heroes, and one is the leader of magic, and one is leader of science, and one is leader of the Inhumans, and one is leader of the sea. Like, that's 70% of everything. Originally, Black Panther, as it was said, was in there a little bit too, because he was a king as well, and he would have been like the monarchy of the group on top of Namor. But that's how the group initially came together, and as it was said in the special, their initial intent wasn't to be a secret society, but to be the start of something bigger. So that's why those people were picked.
Well, it was an awesome first
show. They're all white and powerful, that's how the world works. Two's gorgeous, it's shipping soon.
Cool.
Jimmy's doing the work of his life, which is thrilling, but it's at a much slower pace than we would have hoped, but... The fifth issue is really the issue that matters for continuity, and that'll ship when it has to. But everything else kind of it's not important to the ongoing drama of the Marvel Universe. It's just filling in some holes. So I'd rather have it be excellent.
Sure.
You know what I mean? But,
so so the miniseries itself won't play into.
So the fifth issue does, but
okay.
It'll play, when it's done, it'll play directly into what's going on.
Gotcha. Okay. And, Pat, were there any characters you wanted to use but never got to for this purpose?
No.
Okay.
No, it was, I picked the idea full-formed, and I had already answered a lot of the concerns to myself about, which characters would work, which characters wouldn't, and so everyone was kind of into it.
Okay, no room for a god, no room for
a... No, I mean, I would have loved... that's the thing, with Black Panther and the other characters like that, and Thor is another one,
sure.
And Hercules, they would have been the next people to be talked to if they agreed to go with Tony's idea, which is to start like a UN of superheroes. That was the initial idea. They were getting together to have a lunch to discuss, to go out to the others, and we never got that far, so that's why the others never got in touch with it.
I'm sorry, the cafeteria is serving tuna surprise again. Thank you for coming to the summit today.
Wow.
Am I right? Something like that. Hey, Prime,
yeah.
Why isn't there a Marvel Max Cloak and Dagger ongoing written by you with art by David Finch when it's so obvious it would be the most obvious thing since someone thought of to combine popcorn and butter?
Huh? Yeah, I don't think it would.
Yeah, I don't either, actually.
You might. I appreciate that, and I love you deep in my heart, Hate Prime. Somewhere out there, someone has a killer Cloak and Dagger pitch, and Joe Quesada wants it. I know. That is the one thing that has haunted him his whole run.
Is that true?
Other than Chief, it's someone with that great Cloak and Dagger pitch that is reminiscent to our society today, that means something more than just, white girl, black guy.
Sure.
You know what I mean? It means something.
Nice.
And but that said, the ultimate Cloak and Dagger will be appearing. My ultimate pitch of Cloak and Dagger will be appearing in the page of Ultimate Spider-Man this year.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
Excellent. Shannon asks, if you were a new creator right now with very little money, how would you get the word out and market your work?
Well, you know, the internet's a good place to start, but the mistake that is made is that it's the only place a lot of independent creators are going to. They go into MySpace, they go into the Best of Boards, they, you know, they hawk and hawk and hawk. And, like, the mistake I see a lot of people doing on my board is that they hawk and hawk and hawk, and that's their only contribution to the community, which usually just annoys people or makes people just not pay attention at all. And I told some people that, too. You know, it's, you can plug all you want, I'll never stop you, but you realize that the endless plugging does nothing, but people just ignore it.
Sure.
But if you're a part of a community, that's how you build your audience. The other thing to do is actually put the book online. You know, don't be scared to show it off. And then after you go online, you know, before we had online, you got to do the cons. You got to mail out your books to everyone. I mean, you got to keep mailing it to Wizard and mailing it to the Journal and mailing it over and over and over and over again. But don't just rely on the online community. The online community is very exciting and a very big part of who we are as a global comic community, but not everyone who reads comics is online about comics. I mean, everyone's online, but they don't, you know, necessarily just go to Newsarama. They go to Yahoo and do other stuff, you know.
Sure.
And there's a lot of porn, I heard, online.
I've heard that.
Now people are doing that. So you need to mail your books out. You need to spend a little money on postage and really, really get it out there. Man, I did it. I over and over and over, and, you know, eventually one day your book gets in the hands of the right person. You know, but you can't just happen just sitting in your room, you know, waiting for someone to do you. You got to be a smart businessman. You got to take off your creator hat, put on your business hat, and look at your product and go, okay, how can I market this product effectively? I had one friend, or he's not really a friend, but someone I know, who years ago sent out a promotional poster and said, my book is coming. You know, whatever the book was, I forget what it was. Because, you know, Super Dude is coming. And people are like, Super Dude is coming? That's his poster. And then a week later, Super Dude showed up, and he got a huge response. And the book actually ended up selling 10,000 copies because of that silliness of, you know, spending the money on a poster. And not saying you have to do that, but just, you know, using your brain and looking at what you have. And
did they send it through Diamond, that specific instance, that poster? Or?
No, he sent it, like, two people. He, like, sent it to editors and sent it to journalists and stores.
Oh, okay.
I mean, you can get a list of stores.
Sure,
and hustle their butts. And the good stores, you know, like Mike Malvey in Arizona, and, you know, the guys at Forbidden Planet. And
Isotope.
They want to support you.
Sure.
They're looking to support, man. They are sick to death of Avengers and X-Men. They love, you know, supporting the new guys.
Now, Shannon asks, with the convention season coming up, she makes a good point and says, what are your thoughts on conventions and the indie creator nowadays? It seems that not only do we have to work to get our books out there, but we have to save every penny to afford tables at shows. Some cons are as much as $300 for a table, which is pretty impossible to afford when you add in all the costs of going to a con, airfare, hotel. They had this discussion on the Oming board late last year, and she was curious about your thoughts.
I'm sad to say that it's exactly the situation that we were in the early 90s when we were doing our books. We had to pay for our tables, and we had to pay for our own airfare. You know, no one was handing it out.
Did the price...
I've been on both sides of that fence, baby. It is, I'd much rather land this side. It was hard, man. It was, sometimes I would go there, spend all the money I had, and if I didn't make enough money at that con, that was it for my money for the month, man. That was it.
Sure.
And I would hustle just to make the money back.
Did the price for tables go up with the comic boom and go back down with the bust period as
Depends
well?
Depends which kind of cons. The bigger cons, it costs a lot of money, and you have to reserve way ahead of time.
Sure.
The smaller cons, some people, they say, so go ahead and sit down. Hey, a lot of guys just go in there and sit down and hope Michael Golden doesn't show up. Yeah, it happens a lot, you know.
I just saw Michael Golden at the FX guy. Good
a lot
man.
Of guys, you know, some people don't show up.
No, I didn't.
Or when you get there.
I see. I cross off his name and you're there.
And no, we were in New York Con. Some dude took our tables and went, oh, sorry, dude, you want to share with? And I'm like, no, it's our table. You know, and I felt like a dick, but I'm like, this is our tables, man.
Man, that's chutzpah. That's nice.
No, I can't say that I didn't do that on the other side of it, too, so I respected it. Totally. But, you know, they always give you that dirty look like you're the asshole when you tell them to get the hell out, you know.
Danny Darko. Hi, Brian. Nice to finally be part of one of these things. I've been wondering lately. Oh, from Dublin. Hi, Danny Darko. I've been wondering lately about comic sales. It seems like a lot of books, if not most book sales, are constantly declining throughout storylines unless something big comes up. Since issue one sales are usually highest, wouldn't it be a better idea to have each story be a mini rather than start an ongoing so new readers can easily check out a book every few months?
Depends on the product. It says, I think about this all the time. We talk about it all the time.
Yeah.
I study the history of this. It's never been different, even in the 60s or the 70s.
Did they really do minis back then?
We know what our sales are instantly, whereas they wouldn't know for like 8 months
right,
what the sales were. I was reading that Kirby book, which I talked about last time we were talking, Tales of Astonish by Ronan Rowe, and they would talk about like, you know, you'd be going along thinking you had a hit book, and then 8 months later your numbers come in and you're already on issue 10, and they're like, stop. And that's why so many books went 10 issues.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, that's how it would go, where we know before the book ships exactly how many sold, or, you know, what the pre-order interest was. And that's a big help in knowing what to do and where to go. So it's not any different. You know, and I see people arguing online about whether Omega Flight should be a mini-series or a series of mini-series or an ongoing. And I'm unclear exactly what the defining line in the sand is. I just know that some people seem to think they know. But I remember two books I've been on were greenlit as miniseries that I ignored them, was Sam and Twitch and Ultimate Spider-Man. They were both greenlit as 6-issue miniseries. And I just kept writing.
Mm-hmm.
And then they kind of forgot. But here's the thing. For every, most things do have like an arc decline, but they did back then too, so I don't know. But, you know, it's funny, in magazine distribution, if number one sells out, number two usually has double the orders. In comics, it never happens. Even if number one sells out, number two always takes a hit no matter what. No matter who's on it, no matter who the creator is, no matter what the character is, no matter what the, you know, other than Civil War. That was the only thing that went up because, you know, Civil War had the Spider-Man stuff. Yeah, but, I mean, no matter what it is, you know, Stephen King, Jesus, whoever's writing the book, number two will do less. It's bizarre.
Christ, I'm sorry. We got to cancel. It's not happening.
You took a 30% dip.
I really worked hard on it, though. Something really interesting happens in issue four.
Your apostle variants didn't hold the numbers. Apostle variants.
Wait till you see Peter's cover for issue four. You're going to go nuts. Also, are any of the original graphic novels you wrote being drawn? The original graphic novels you've wrote or currently wrote being drawn at the moment, or are you still waiting to become less busy?
I have one that will be getting drawn soon and one that will start being drawn this summer.
Okay. Will they be coming out through Icon?
Probably.
Okay.
It's the best deal and
sure.
The best distribution, I can't imagine.
Okay.
Getting a better offer.
T. Daniel asks, the option on Powers.
I love T. Daniel. Daniel's the man.
From Missoula. The option on Powers was not exercised. Does it make sense to keep the film in-house at Marvel? If not a film, how about an animated serial? And if not an animated serial, how about an HBO series? Also, can you describe the feeling inside when David Mack calls you sweetie?
Well, that's an easier question. It's a warm and fuzzy feeling.
Not a man
love. Heterosexual feeling, but directed at him. Let's see.
So Powers...
Powers is not with the studio right now. The problem is there's quite a hefty price tag attached to it because of all the money that was spent on it. But that doesn't mean that there is another way to get it made into something. So we're kind of... I'm finishing up what we're doing now, and then we're going to weigh our options about what to do with it. It's not going to be in-house at Marvel. Marvel's financially invested in their own films with the stuff that they own.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they're going to work on Iron Man and Cap and
sure.
Whatever else they're working on, Hulk. So, I mean, that's what they should be doing. That's, you know, it's a lot
right,
of money.
Right, it's their babies, yeah.
Yeah, so...
Just as Powers is yours and Mike's.
Yeah, and Powers is owned by me and Mike. So, you know, we'll go out, you know, we've never thrown it out there as a TV show. An HBO series would be great, and HBO's been really nice to me over the last couple of years. So, I don't know. There's been a lot of, you know, discussion, but nothing is going on right now that I could say, well, that's definitely going to happen. So we'll see what happens. And that's weird. I you know, some things get made right away. Some things take 20 years, and some things you look at and go, wow, that totally could be a movie, and then it just isn't. So you never know. Again, but you know, here's the news, man. It's, you know, Powers is this comic book we love, and whether he ever becomes a movie or not won't change my feelings towards what we've accomplished and what we're going to accomplish with it. We're going to have some big Powers news coming up this summer. Mike took a stab at writing an annual, and that he did a really awesome job on. So we're going to have another annual this summer, and
cool.
We're doing a Powers handbook is in production by T. Daniel. He's helping us out with putting out a handbook, putting out an encyclopedia, Powers encyclopedia, and maybe a change of format.
What is the? Can you give us any information about the handbook?
Cool. Not like the Marvel handbook. A little different, but in the same vein as the Marvel handbooks, where just like all the characters and every, you know, pretty much, you know, a resource for all the stuff that's been going on in all the books.
Okay.
Tying stuff up, and actually debuting quite a few new characters as well.
Very cool.
We'll be seeing an upcoming arc, so it'll be up to date for a while.
John Drake?
Yep. A lot of dead people, that's what it is.
John Drake, if by the time you read this, your next pre-Spider-Woman project with Maliv is already announced, can you talk a little bit about it?
It's not announced yet. It'll be announced soon. It's pretty big.
Okay. Also, what's the worst kind of research you had to do for a project? Maybe some boring programming language stuff, something else?
You know, you end up, because I get to write what I want to write, you know, 90% of the time, most of the research is stuff I'm genuinely interested in. That's why I wanted to write in the beginning. So it's not too hard to dive in. I mean, what's surprising me is the amount of scientific research I've been doing the last 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Where if you just told me 20 years ago you'll be doing all this DNA research on your free time and enjoying it, that would surprise me. But I do. I enjoy all the research. I mean, I did an idiotic amount of research about cloning for the Clone Saga, none of which is in the book. Just so I feel better about, like, I know how to make a clone or how a clone would be made. So, but then I had, you know, female Peter hugging male Peter. You know, that's what I ended up with. So
yeah, which is a great Penthouse forum letter.
Yeah, I know. It ends up being very close to, as close as Marvel gets to incest. I had it right there. So, or masturbation. I'm not sure what it was. Either one of them. It's one of those things. But that's what I ended up with. But meanwhile, I did 3 months of reading cloning manuals. So I don't know. It's weird. Yeah.
That was appropriately sweet and appropriately icky. That whole sequence.
I have. She's appearing later in the summer, and I've topped it, and I got it approved. It's approved. And I can't believe it.
Attaboy.
I'm very proud of her. So you end up, so there he is.
Stretch that envelope, attaboy.
There you go.
I'm with It's D. Levy. What's your Purim costume this year?
My Purim costume? Holy Lord.
Gregor, aren't you?
Yeah.
Come on, you're always
I'm
Gregor.
I'm a Haman Tassin.
Okay. And I say this as a Greek, not knowing any of the characters. Only that Gregor's the noisemaker. The Travis, Bendis, if I invited you to my wedding, would you show, or would you just send me an extravagant gift?
One or the other.
He's in the insurance capital of the world, which is Hartford, Connecticut, I'm assuming.
I am very proud of that Travis found a woman that would touch him.
In Hartford.
I never would have thought.
All right.
God bless you and your lovely bride.
Dave Cummings. Hey, Brian, I know how much you love The Departed, but have you had a chance to watch Infernal Affairs yet, the Hong Kong movie that The Departed was based off of?
I actually today went to find the Infernal Affairs trilogy that I released in conjunction with The Departed, and it was not available, so I'm in search.
Yeah, I'm curious about that, too. I still haven't seen it either.
No, I'm looking to buy.
Did you buy The Departed today?
Oh, it was such a good DVD day today. It was really great.
What else did you get?
I watched it in like a month. I got Departed, I got Half Nelson, I got the United States versus John Lennon.
That is a decent documentary. The reason why I say decent is I read about it all in Rolling Stone before seeing the movie.
Well, they've got tons of extras, like 18 hours of extras that all look juicy. And The Departed's got the Scorsese on Scorsese movie classic channel special.
Good to know.
Yeah, just great stuff all around today. I even bought Mary Antoinette, and I have no idea why.
Yeah, I'll be kidding. You're going to have to tell us about that if it's good or not. Although, you know, you like Be Cool, so what the hell?
I did not like Be Cool. How dare you? Don't put that out there.
Yeah, well, I know. I had to slap it.
I got enough shit about me online.
That's true. All right.
All right.
What kind of nefarious person was we make a deal with to get Steve Sprosh to work with you on an Avengers
episode? He is on my wish list, baby. He is. He makes a nice living out there in the Hollywood land that I would work with him in 2 seconds. I'd drop everything. I'm a big, big fan.
You bet. The Travis, I believe you said in the last podcast that you dug the TV show Heroes. How's that possible? I would think that the dialogue of the show...
I said I have not seen it yet.
Okay.
And I know I said that because I have not seen it yet.
You still haven't seen it?
Saw the pilot.
Okay.
Enjoyed the pilot. I heard it's much better than the pilot was. I got a little frustrated with that the guy who runs the show was running around saying he never read a comic book before, but in the pilot referenced a specific issue of X-Men. And I'm like, well, I thought, you know, you can't do so. But I have a lot of friends working on that show. I was TiVoing it, and I went out of town for something, and I lost like 4 of the episodes. It just annoys me. And now I got to wait for like the DVD.
Oh, you know, it moves slow enough that I think you'd be able to pick up pretty fast.
I didn't have a loss last year. I missed like 5 episodes of Lost, and I had to watch season 2 like when the box came out. I should call Omen and just have him send him, he'll send him to me. I should do that.
I know a lot of people feel like the dialogue in Heroes is very deliberate, but I also think that they are educating a non-comic book audience.
Mm-hmm.
And when you've got 14 million people watching every week, I'm imagining that's more than just the comic book readers watching it. So
yeah, it's a huge hit. No doubt. But Alex is working on it now, and
that's cool.
And Loeb, who I just adore, is working on it, and so I'm looking forward to see what they do, man. Now that the mythology is kicking in, I think that's what's going on now, from what I gather.
Brandon, 191. Hi, Brian. Would taking some of your painkillers help get you through this interview?
I shook him out. I'm off the hot horse now.
And by the way,
he's talking about I had massive dental surgery over the last couple months to rectify some genetic periodontal issues that I've had and will no longer have. I'm happy to say so. And I was posting high a couple times. And as someone on the board posted, which I thought was hilarious, and I told my wife this to go, and I say, "Wow, I'm so high." Someone posted that. You're like that kid, that freshman, who goes, "Oh, man, I'm so high. Look how high I am," because it's the first time you ever got high. And everyone just kind of, like, ignores you and politely nods. And I thought it was pretty funny because that's exactly what it was. But let me give you some dental advice. I did this.
Okay.
This is the greatest thing. When the doctor, the dentist asks you, he Novocaine's you up, and then he pokes you to ask you if it hurts, you know?
Yes.
Say it hurts anyhow. I just go, ooh, ooh, even though I can't even feel it. But you know he's doing it. You just go, ooh, ooh, and then he keeps giving you more and more Novocaine, and I take so much Novocaine, I can't feel my nose, my eyes start tearing, and my fingers go numb.
Nice.
And then, you know, you just don't feel it for like 2 days, it's fantastic. Highly recommend it, it's great. And I do it every time, and it works I can't believe the doctor doesn't go, "You're lying." He never says, he always goes, "Okay," and just blasts Novocaine all over my face.
Mr. Bendis has gone through 3 cases of Percodan. I don't understand it.
Yeah.
And that's when you put on Dark Side of the Moon and watch Wizard of Oz, right?
Exactly.
Man.
I watched The Illusionist hanging upside down off my couch.
Did you? That's cool. What other painkillers did you get? I'm not asking because I'm a fan.
I actually don't remember.
Oh, yeah.
I actually didn't end up using a lot. I had like one day. Every time I had it, I just used it for the day.
Yeah, I think a bottle is sitting in the medicine cabinet for the right occasion.
Saving it for a rainy day.
Feel like
I'm going to sell them a con.
You should auction them off. That is his prescription. Come on, who wants it? Feel like smocking up.
Got his comic book writers. What?
No. I'll take clean bottles. Hey, Bendis, I want to, Phil X Machina, I want to start out by saying the Illuminati miniseries you and Brian Reed are working on is really great, even though it's really just started. It seems like more of an old-school fun book, which is what I think people really enjoy about the book. Keep up the awesome work.
Thank you.
I have some Ultimate Clone Saga questions for you.
Okay.
Question 1. Why the change in powers for Doc Ock? Was it something you planned for a while now?
I had made that note on issue 11. So I planned it a long time.
Number 2. Was this in any way another new Avengers breakout in which you get to spawn a whole series of new problems from one arc, or was the intent more to just cause as much chaos as possible in Peter's life?
I think even though there's a lot of, as people have read the whole arc now, or close to have read the whole arc, I see that most of the chaos got contained to the arc, but you always want to have an arc that has the best arcs, and not every arc can have this, but the best arc has that much internal angst, but then also as resolution, but at the same time carry stuff to the next story. Mm-hmm. So that's, I think, what the Clone Saga had. Whereas in New Avengers, the breakout arc was the start of a swarm of stories. You know what I mean? It was
yes.
like the not only did it cause dramatic, you know, and vibrant conflict, but there's also a theme to it that's ongoing. So they're two different things. I mean, they sound close, but they are very different.
Number three, your run on the book really seems more focused on Peter Parker than Spider-Man, I'm assuming on the Clone Saga arc. Was it intentional that Peter spent only one issue in costume?
Yeah, I was very proud of that. It's very rarely even mentioned in discussion. Peter hasn't been in costume since, like, 98, and no one cared. And that was always the goal. He'll be mutually in costume for the final Bagley arc and on, but you know, most of it happens over the course of one horrible day, and there just isn't a costume involved.
Very cool. When's the trade coming out for Clone Saga?
I don't know. I think about Bunt, end of March. I don't know. I can never keep up.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a premiere hardcover, which I know is a controversial decision.
Well,
I can't wait to answer this one. I saw this one posted.
Yeah, have you ever been accused of being a Scorsese apologist? Come on now, be honest. It must have happened once or twice, right? Like, oh, say, around the time of Gangs of New York.
This ain't like the Gilmore Girls. He's the greatest living American director. How hard is it? How dare you? First of all, Gangs of New York was a phenomenal piece of filmmaking. By any other filmmaker would have been lauded. If Neil Jordan would have done that, people were, holy crap, look
sure.
what Neil Jordan did. Because of Scorsese, he's judged at a high level. You know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
Now, I've read every single draft that Gangs of New York, it's been gone for about 20 years. There's drafts written for De Niro and drafts written for Keitel, and there's just all these different variations of it.
I didn't know that.
It's a phenomenal read if you get a chance. There's like a pre-Kenneth Lagerin drafts, because there's a lot of writers I really love who wrote those, and I'm a huge Kenneth Lagerin fan, too,
mm-hmm.
who wrote the last draft. And I don't know. I adore it.
Hey, some people go to the movies for really great filmmakers, and some, like Ernest, goes to camp. And Kefki, good luck.
That's right, Kefki. You go there. Go ahead. Just send some love. A movie out soon, I'm sure. So enjoy it.
Yeah, I'm with you on this. Scorsese's a genius, camp, and I don't think that's very small.
Holy crap! Yeah. Listen, I wasn't a big fan of that ambulance movie. I remember
Waking the Dead. Yeah.
What was it?
Waking the Dead.
Waking the Dead. Nicolas Cage. I didn't like it. But listen,
yeah.
Out of 30 movies, 28 of them have been classics.
I would agree. Night Spider. First of all, I must congratulate you on starting the new Q&A thread. It was our pleasure. You said in a previous podcast that any character we didn't like in the Marvel Universe, you'd have Sentry throw said character into the sun just so long as it's not you. I have one, and I refer to your first post.
Uh-huh.
I'm sure you'll agree with me.
Uh-huh.
So who? Oh, must be Paste Pot Pete. Why haven't you thrown him into the sun?
Boy, all right, he's gone.
All right, there you
Night
go.
Night Rider, enjoy the board from afar.
All right, and then what is your weapon of choice for Gears of War? And what?
Fork bow.
What is
Fork
it?
Bow Fork and bow. The back of Matt Fraction's head.
And what Xbox 360 game do you recommend?
We're all digging Lost Planet right now. That's my little crew of guys. Kind of like Lost Planet because it's like Call of Duty, but you have giant like Transformer snow robots.
Okay.
Beat the shit out of each other.
Sure.
But you know it's funny. You know we've done the Gears, we've done the Halo, we've done the thing. We keep going back to Call of Duty 2, not 3. We keep going back to 2. Can't tell you why.
Interesting.
I bought a PlayStation 3, too. I have no idea why.
All right. Interesting. Do you have a Wii or no?
No.
All right.
Is that sex talk? What are you talking about?
No, exactly.
I didn't get a Wii.
Okay. How about any recommendations for comics, movies, or books?
Books, I'm reading David Mamet's Bambi versus Godzilla. There's a shock, I know, but I am. And,
You're the Mamet apologist. You're not the Scorsese.
Yeah, I am the Mamet. Yeah, that's one thing I do, yeah. But now Mamet's, finally written his Go Fuck Yourself Hollywood book, which you knew was coming for the last 20 years, and it is angry.
Okay.
It is one angry, funny book. So, not a lot of surprises in it, like, you know, actors are shallow pinheads and producers are liars, but it's still interesting reading. Movies, I've seen actually Children of Men, which I fucking loved.
Yeah, I got to see that stuff.
Yeah, there is a sequence in this movie that's about a 10 or 15 minute war scene with no edits. That is maybe the most amazing single shot in film history.
That's
up there with the opening of The Player. It's really amazing stuff.
Did you see Smokin' Aces?
I did not see Smokin' Aces. I'll catch that on DVD. I just, you know.
Yeah. You're busy.
Too busy seeing Happy Feet in this fucking minute. But, got a 4-year-old. It's all about Happy Feet. But, I saw The Illusionist and I liked it. I saw The Notorious Betty Page.
That was
and
great.
And I liked it. And Miami Vice was the surprise of the bunch.
Yeah, I just heard that too. My nephew told me that.
Yeah,
I'm like, okay.
Called it something else. I mean, honestly, you just sort of called it something else. It's a very good Michael Mann crime movie.
Oh,
it kind of feels like a Brubaker comic in the best way.
Oh, that's cool.
It's dark. It's very well shot. And the good news is, I think a whole hour goes by with Jimmy Fox and Colin Farrell don't say a word. Which I think, if you're going to have them in a movie, that's the best way to do it.
Here.
I mean, there was a fraction said that it's got the funniest line of the year in it when, Colin Farrell doesn't say anything for about an hour, and then someone asks him what his favorite drink is, and he says, "I go crazy for mojitos." And it's just, if you're not going to talk for an hour, that's not the best line to come back with. The line of dialogue is pretty funny.
Hello?
I'm crazy for mojitos, that's what it is.
Yikes, man.
Yeah, so, but if I don't know, it's a very good movie. I'm sure I didn't tell anybody with that. A little bit, but yeah.
And Night Spider gives his best to the Mishpucha. That's very nice.
Thank you. They're all doing very well.
Very good.
Yeah.
And I have to say,
with yourself a 4-year-old, they're awesome.
Very cool. Christina Ricci not looking too good at the Grammys.
Well, she's doing some kind of weird emaciated Olsen twins black snake moan thing.
Yeah.
It's really creepy. I don't know what that movie is. It is some bizarre thing, man. I don't know. She does. She looks vacant and direct.
Hark. Hey, Bendis. Yes. I was recently rereading my Powers trades, which have great extras, by the way.
Thank you, Hark.
And in the back of Volume 3, there's an interview conducted by Alex Hamby.
Alex Hamby of the now-defunct Hero Realm.
In the interview, you're asked about your high output of comics, and part of your reply is, so I don't drink and I don't play video games, which is the most horrible thing to happen to mainstream comics. The creation of the PlayStation. If it would take them away from comic creators, you wouldn't hear about a late book. Now, though you have a 360 and you're playing it online with other creators, no less, what's changed?
What? Are you throwing words in my face? What? Listen, I'm not running for president. I'm going to say shit. No, honestly, I work in the video game industry. How's the way you read some rationalization?
It's research.
I actually am working on a video game right now and worked on a video game last year, so the rationalization to work and do video game stuff is all, it's all research. Thank you.
Well, that's between you and your accountant, sir. So that's good. Congratulations.
Listen, it's all about using your time wisely. So.
Fair enough.
Thank you.
Night Spider again.
And yes, I was full of shit, and I'm an asshole. There you go.
Now, no,
is that what you wanted to prove? You didn't have enough proof? Did I talk out of my ass?
Yeah.
It's a 5-hour podcast. I'm going to say shit.
We're doing pretty good, actually. We're only at 45 minutes.
All right.
And 30 questions. That's not bad. Right. That only means about 7 hours or so. if I don't see daylight, I consider it a success.
Okay, good.
Night Spider, did you see The Black Dahlia? We did discuss this before. What were your thoughts?
Oh, it's a horrible movie. It's a terrible, terrible movie. And Hilary Swank should give back an Oscar for the Natasha from Boards and Natasha. Accent. I'm a femme fatale.
In case you couldn't tell, exactly. Yeah, that was really
terrible
bad.
Movie.
Well
written.
Yeah.
It was very disappointing.
And what were your top 5 movies of last year?
Departed, Borat, I don't know.
There's two.
What else came out?
Yeah, really. Well, did you like The Illusionist, obviously?
I wouldn't put in my top 5 there. Yeah, I enjoyed it. It was a fun little romp.
Casino Royale? Would you put that up there?
What?
Casino Royale?
Oh, yeah, you know I would. I really did like that movie.
I thought so. Really, yeah. I would, too.
Yeah, I really liked that. I like The Queen a lot. I got to tell you, if you ever get a chance, you got to write a mainstream studio film, because
mm-hmm.
then you get on this the Oscar Send You Free DVDs list.
Go talk to me.
And I know Kirkman got it, too, but every day for like a month, you get a free DVD in the mail. of a movie that's in theaters that you probably would have paid to go see.
Oh, screeners, yeah.
Yeah, you get the screeners. The screeners are awesome. They were just coming, sometimes two at a time, and you're like, woohoo! The Queen! Little Children!
I loved The Queen. I thought The Queen was outstanding.
Yeah, I really enjoyed The Queen. Was a nice surprise. So that's fun about the screeners is that you get to put them in and find these little surprises that you probably wouldn't have seen if you didn't hand it to you. So, there you go.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Blandy. Let's see.
F you, Blandy.
Dear Brian, I'm thinking about transferring with my job to Portland in about a year. How does it feel knowing I could deliver your mail? Best friend forever, Blandy.
We're going to find a security guard.
Kevin Rock. Number one, are you writing any tie-ins for World War Hulk?
No.
All right.
I got to tie in everything. The guys are doing it, got a really good handle on it. So.
Okay. Civil War, The Return. I thought using the Barry Allen method to bring back you-know-who was fun, and even DC used that idea for Hal Jordan before they really brought him back to life.
Mm-hmm.
Who was the guy that said, I have the perfect way to bring him back, and did anyone say that's the Barry Allen method?
Barry Allen was not mentioned. It was Joe-centric, but I don't know if Joe came up with the idea of how to bring it back. I know it was very Loeb and Quesada. I remember them doing a lot of talking about it. But I can't remember. I don't want to take away from anybody.
All right.
Yeah. And Paul wrote it, and whoever wrote it, they get the credit for it.
Yeah. On the Howard Stern show, Steve Langford called you the writer of the X-Men. Did you feel like actually calling you to the show and explaining what comic books you've actually written?
You know, I just so happy my name is pronounced right and that it wasn't a practical joke on Millar doing a fucking joke on me. The rigmarole I had to go through to make sure this is real, because it seemed so odd to me that they wanted to interview me, that I kind of know Ralph Sorello, so I had to send it to Ralph Sorello, and he went around and found out it was real, and then I did the interview. But that's how insane my life is now, because of Mark and his practical jokes. I was just happy with Steve Langford that called me. I was so excited, I couldn't even tell you. Because there was some producer I was talking to, he was a nice guy, and then all of a sudden they go, hello, Steve Langford. I'm like, yay! It's like you're going on The View and you find out Bubba Walters is going to be there.
Anytime he mentions one of the books, either from Marvel or DC, it's a big deal, and people go out looking for it.
Brian Michael Bendis, award-winning comic book writer and Stern fan, telling Howard 100 News, Howard's been a big booster for comic books, a medium that generally doesn't get that much attention.
Absolutely, and it's always great to hear him, whatever catches his eye.
Bendis, best known for his writing at Marvel Comics, blown away the day he says he was listening to The Stern Show, and Howard suddenly started talking about his work.
It was Ultimate Spider-Man. It was the first year the book came out, and someone had got him a copy, I don't know who, and he was discussing it, what he liked about it, and I was like, wait a second, he's talking about my comic. Yeah, it was pretty nice.
Over the years, Bendis says he has written references to Howard and The Stern Show into his comic books at least a dozen times, he says, but Bendis would like to take his Stern tribute one step further.
It would be great to see Howard appear in these comics just because they are New York and he is New York.
So how about a comic book on one of history's great unsung superheroes? You know, Howard's alter ego.
Actually, I see Fartman, I would like to see live action just because you got to, you know, the fart on the comic book page might not have the same renaissance as it would have in live action.
Fartman and Robin, a breath of fresh air. For Howard 100 News, I'm Steve Feinberg.
Since Doctor Strange is finally an Avenger, how long until we see the Silver Surfer join up? He's the last of the big four defenders that is yet to be an Avenger. That's interesting.
Bendis board member Vroom Sacco is someone I see on a regular basis who lives in Portland. And I was with my child last week, and he came up to me and said, hey, it's the Defenders, I don't care what you say. And I said, if it's Valkyrie on the team, it's the Defenders. Without Valkyrie in her metal cone boobs, it's not the Defenders. And he went, yeah, okay, I could see that. And he walked away. And I told by that. To which my daughter turned to me and goes, what the hell was that? And I go, yeah, my daughter wanted to know why grown man was yelling at me about Spider-Man.
Yeah, it's only going to get worse when that kid gets older.
I know. And she goes, it was a pretty funny conversation. She goes, what was he talking about? I go, that was one of my books. He reads my books. And he was talking about one of my books. He goes, why was he angry?
Number five, where can I get a Captain America toy with Screaming Chip? One of the funniest parts of the first of Alice's Thunderbolts. For a more serious question, I noticed that many of the Civil War spinoffs are miniseries. I understand that the market can't support all these new products and that these minis are a test to see what can or can't survive as an ongoing.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, at what point did Marvel realize that many of these projects should be miniseries? Omega Flight started off as an ongoing before Marvel decided to change it to a mini. Was seeing the numbers of Infinite Crisis spinoffs not exactly tearing up the sales charts contributing to the decision?
I don't know. I was not in the room for that decision, so I don't know how that goes. And, you know, David Gabriel's the guru, and he's right way more than he's wrong. So I'm going to have to he's led me down many a profitable path. So I'm going to have to say that he knows what he's talking about. But the way, hey, listen, you want to see these things continue? You want to see more of these kind of products? Vote with your wallet. Support them. Pre-order them. If you like what you see, buy them. I've said this about my work. I've said this about anything that you see out there. I know this for a fact. Every movie ticket you buy, you're casting a vote like it's a presidential election to see 10 more movies just like it next year. Same thing goes with the comics. The publishers will do what you say, but you have to say. All right? And the same thing with what's going on. You know, the pro part is what's going on with Avengers. You said yes, and you get more. You know,
sure.
Hopefully good, but that's what happens. You know, the Canadian Super Team has been a rough sell over the last few years, and they do want it to sell. I know they do. They want it to be a hit. They want you to like it. A lot of effort has been put into it. Buy it. Same thing with the initiative. Support it, and they will give you more. And also, sometimes some things just are miniseries. You know what I mean? The idea is a good idea for 5 issues.
No,
not everything should be ongoing. Not everything should go forever and ever and ever.
Completely agree. And there are a lot of characters that I don't think can support ongoing series, but are nice to see in a good miniseries.
A good
every, now and then.
Every once in a while.
Sure.
Absolutely.
Pat McDonald. Bendikins, when you were planning out Ultimate Clone Saga, what, if anything, did you go back and read from the 616 Saga? Were there any specific elements you wanted to incorporate, or on the flip side of that, anything you wanted to avoid?
Well, I wanted to avoid it going on and on and on and then in sight. That was number one on the checklist. But what I wanted to capture was that feeling we had when we liked it. You know, everyone always remembers how everything goes to hell. They don't remember that the reason it went on and on is because people were really digging it. You know what I mean? And there wasn't a lot of things selling back then. So when you guys voted with your wallet, they went nuts, you know? And the only thing I read was the special that Marvel put out called 101 Ways to End the Clone Saga.
Right.
To see if actually any of those were really a good idea. That they didn't do. That I could steal. But it was, you know, and it's just funny to me that even exists, that publication was produced during the Clone Saga's never-ending story, which is funny in itself that they had enough time to put that together and release it, and the story still wasn't over.
Very true.
So I just wanted to, you know, everything when we do an Ultimate, even with Venom, you know, when we were first bringing back Venom, everyone's like, "Oh, hey, people hate Venom." I'm like, no, they don't hate Venom. They hate what happened to Venom. They actually liked Venom when you first showed him.
Homer Gator, admit it, Ultimate Ronin is Geldof. Okay. I got to say, after seeing all these preview covers for New Avengers versus Mighty Avengers, I'm excited as I've ever been for Avengers comics. You probably answered this before, but do you ever sit back for a second and take pride in the fact you helped make The Avengers the premier book for Marvel?
The key word there is help. It was a bunch of us, but I am immensely proud of it. Immensely proud. And I'm immensely proud of what's coming. I've seen like 6 or 7 completely finished and lettered books that have not shipped yet, and they're gorgeous. They're just, I still buy these books, and it is, and as I said in another podcast, I mean, you can do everything right, and it still just not have the magical stuff, you know?
Sure.
And you can just go, boy, we tried so hard, but, you know, but this stuff I'm very proud of, so I'm excited for what's coming. Ain't seen nothing yet.
What other podcast?
True Believer. I did call in the fanboy, but you know.
I heard that.
but I didn't directly talk to Scott.
Yeah, I kind of noticed that, actually. It was kind of interesting. Shocking, man. That you killed me. I listened to that.
I love Scott and Oliver and whoever that other guy is.
How long do you think it will be before we get David Mack doing some Avengers work with you? Please, please, please.
I don't think he'll be doing any Avengers work. It isn't really where his passions lie, but we are knee-deep co-writing a book we're both very happy with right now.
Yeah, do you have any more comments on the...
That, I think, is announced in New York Comic-Con, too.
Okay, buddy.
Well.
Fair enough.
All I'll say is the Frank's got a big mouth. Whoever.
Started scanning our international internet, please.
Yeah, to be the most unexciting announcement ever.
Also, please make Hawkeye the new Ronin, although I think it's Black Widow playing one side over against the other.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I don't... Six Justice dudes, it's so far been into this.
Yeah, and by the way, yeah, I'm still trying to figure out the Yo, Luke. It's like, all right, is that a Stallone Yo? Is that a Army Yo? Is that a Black Yo?
So Cap likes to say Yo. He didn't feel like he could do it with the deal. Now he can say Yo.
Exactly. Exactly. So, yeah, I think that crosses Steve off the list. There you go. So I'm my guess is Blade.
All right.
And I just said it. There you go. So when Cassie I'm wrong, Lane. When I'm wrong, you can make fun of me. Or you can
no
rewrite it.
No one guessed Cassie Lang. That's interesting.
Michael Blacklist, how's the recovery from the dental surgery going?
It was very intensive dental surgery. It's going very, very well. As you can hear, I'm not a mess. I'm good.
Number two, you mentioned before how Civil War changed your plans for New Avengers. Have there ever been instances of you changing your long-term plans on a book due to unforeseen circumstances? Every year.
I can't think of an unforeseen circumstance, because anything that gets thrown in your way... Kind of, I've said before, it's kind of an excuse to be creative.
Okay.
Because you kind of sit there and go, okay, you know. And at the same time, I kind of like stuff like that, especially in the ongoing titles, because it's kind of like life. I mean, like in life, you wake up and you think you're going to have a certain kind of day. By the end of the day, something's happened and your day becomes something totally else. So I kind of like the idea of having, like, you think you know what's going to happen in Captain America's life. Oh, Civil War, and now something else happened. I don't know. It's kind of got a good feeling. So it's got a real organic, natural life feel to it, and then have the characters react honestly.
All right.
Thank you.
How far have you gotten through one project before canning it and then starting again from the top?
Oh, I finished projects and then canned them. Yeah, I got whole things here written. They
will never see the light of day. You're like Prince in his videos.
Every time, I'm exactly like Prince in his video. with the assless pants. But, you know, I take a lot of, it means a lot to me. Someone's paying a couple bucks for something with my name on it, and it's got to be what I think it's got to be, you know.
G101. Hey, Bendis, how's life treating you these days?
Good, thanks. Podcast small talk.
Next year, I have to do a ridiculously long report, and the subject I've chosen is how comics are portrayed by the media.
Are you calling the project Easy A?
I need several creators to answer set questions on the matter to put into my report.
The A's getting easier. Will you do my project for me?
Would you mind answering said questions and maybe passing them around to whoever's willing to fill them in?
Can I pass them around to you for them? Can I type it up for you too?
Guys, here's some index cards. Loeb, this is yours. Brubaker, these are yours.
No, he doesn't want an index card. He wants us to type it up, to type the answers, and then he can just cut and paste them into his report.
Hey, you'll all get a special thanks, and if it's good enough, it gets to go in a textbook and everything.
Wow, that is an exciting... I gotta go call my wife and tell her what happened just now. She's upstairs. Let me go tell her.
Go ahead.
Hey, honey, I'm going to be in a paper.
Craig C., Bendis, I finally got to read your Secret War. I love the story and the artwork in it. My only complaint was that it felt like it was too short. Have you considered adapting and writing this as a novel? If not, any plans to do a Nick Fury mini, maybe showing what he was doing after the events of Secret War and everything leading up to Civil War? And if you couldn't or weren't able to, who would you like to see write it and draw it?
A lot of Secret War, that stuff kind of started the rolling New Avengers, House of M, Civil War. I mean, it kind of started this roll towards a certain feel of comics, which I'm pretty happy about. It's hard to see. It doesn't seem short to me, but I would like to see more of it too. But you are just going to see more of it, New Avengers and Avengers and Mighty Avengers, and you will find out what Nick Fury's been doing all this time.
Somewhere,
absolutely. You know, in my books.
In your books, okay, yeah. Okay. Very cool. Marco 19. Bendis, love these podcasts. A few questions.
Yes.
Number one, you recently mentioned another New Avengers annual. Any early ideas on who's going to draw it?
I I think it's the Neil. We're not there yet, but I think we're good for the Neil. It's his book.
Okay. Are we going to see Mark Brooks back for Ultimate Spidey Annual number 3?
No, but not as a diss to Mark. Mark is doing something else, and the artist has been hired for the Ultimate Spider-Man Annual, and it will make a lot of people happy.
I know there's a big Daredevil announcement coming very soon, but are you planning to contribute anything to Daredevil issue 100?
That is not my book. That is Ed's book. So no, not really.
You mentioned there may be some more Wolverine-centric stories coming up in New Avengers.
Yes.
Any hints or teases?
Issue 34 is a Wolverine kicking ass all by himself story. Wolverine versus the Hood coming up.
Any plans to possibly use either Moon Knight, Ghost Rider, or the Punisher in the Avengers books?
No, but you are going to see Punisher and Moon Knight in Ultimate Spider-Man.
Okay. And while we're on the subject of Ghost Rider, I'm just curious if you know, and you may not. Is the Western Ghost Rider, like, is that a public domain character that Marvel can use in comics? Or
I have no idea.
All right. And how much does it cost for an Aurora 1967 glow-in-the-dark Frankenstein while we're on the subject?
I would know that before I would know what the public domain.
All right, never mind. Or I don't even know if the Western Ghost Rider is.
That's a good question, too.
Well, you know, because I've been seeing the trailers. And
well, I know Betty Boop's in the movie, too.
All right, number 6. Seeing how almost all the new Avengers characters have their own solo series, how much, say, leeway and power do you have when you want to bring forth a major status quo change? I know you work with the editors and have those Marvel Creator Summits, and some books are written by your buddies, Brubaker, Reed, etc., but how much latitude are you given to shake things up?
I do get a lot of latitude, but I don't ever do anything that, you know, we do it as a group. You know, I go, hey, I got an idea, and, you know, like there's some Miss Marvel stuff coming up that, you know, if Brian wasn't into it, it would just, I would go somewhere else. I just wouldn't do it. You know what I mean? That's so obnoxious to do that to somebody.
Sure.
And I know it's been done in the past. I hear stories all the time of this guy just went and destroyed someone else's book by, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Doing something in his book. And it's just not cool. And I think karma comes, and all those guys, karma comes to get him, and, you know, it just makes for bad comics. And what you want, the best thing, is when you guys do it all together and all the books are inspired and everyone's excited and they feel like they're working on something really fun, and then that fun translates to the reader. So you never put your ego out there first. It's just a waste of time. So yeah, we'll come up with an idea. And a lot of ideas come in too. They go, hey, we're going to do this, you know. Spidey's in the black costume, you know. You incorporate it into the thing, and then I throw something back at them. Hey, Spidey's going to do this, and I go, oh, cool, okay. So
very cool.
And then every once in a while, you know, there's something happening in the book, and that's what's going to happen, and you have to deal, just like we said. But you make it fun. You make it into a fun thing. And listen, after what I did to the fucking X books and half of them, I don't even work in that office. Look what I did to those things. I'm going to bitch if someone's got an idea, if someone's going to throw something out there. No.
Wacker's still trying to fix it. The Ultimate Universe, I know, has taken a back burner since Civil War and such, but are there any plans to make these books special again and to try and bring back that excitement from the beginning?
Well, you know, I don't really see it that way. It's not so much a back burner because, like, I don't think Ultimate Spider-Man is on the back burner at all.
No.
It isn't in my heart. It doesn't seem to be in people's eyes, and the sales are as good as they've ever been. So that's not the case. You know, Ultimate comes out so infrequently, it's difficult. You know what I mean?
Yes. Judge,
but it's still, every time it comes out, it sells 100,000. So boom, boom, you know. And the other two books are, you know, they've got relatively new creative teams, and they're finding their voice. So, to me, it doesn't feel that way. But that said, you know, Ultimate Power is going to, you know, cause new developments in the Ultimate Universe that I think people will be intrigued by. And there will be something announced at New York Comic Con, and I know I sound like one of those Joe Friday columns when he doesn't announce anything. There will be an announcement of Ultimate stuff that I am involved in New York, I think in New York, about what we're going to do for the summer that I think people really dig.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's see.
But my heart is very much in the Ultimate Universe. So it's my, even though I spend nor enough time promoting the Avengers, my heart is equally impassioned about Powers and also the Spider-Man.
Wild Force, number one. At the start of Civil War, the book, not the overall event, the start felt to me at least like it would be equal parts action and political personal drama. Mm-hmm. While there was much of that in issues 1 and 2, the many took a sharp turn towards action from there on in, with the dramatic sides being explored more closely in Frontline and your own New Avengers Disassembled arc.
Mm-hmm.
As a writer in general and as the writer of the bookends of the Civil War event, would you have kept a more even tone in the Civil War mini? Do you think it fleshed out as it should have, or did I just miss the boat entirely?
That's the perfect example. You know, you with an event like this, people have an expectation
mm-hmm.
of what they think it should be versus what the author is going to deliver. And it's happened to me both pro and con. People thought they knew what House was going to be, or
yes.
decided what it was going to be, and only after they got to the end did they judge it more favorably.
Sure.
When it wasn't what they thought it was going to be. And so I've been through this on a smaller level than what, you know, Mark will go through on Civil War. But what I liked about it, actually, was that Mark's tendency, what he was interested in, was much more combative, and the parts of that story that I was much more interested in and wanted to focus my attention on were things he was not interested in or was willing to hand over. So for me, it was the perfect situation. I really got to write the scenes that were in my... When this was all being put together, you have these scenes that are in your head, but it's not your book. It's his book. And when I saw he wasn't going to do these scenes that were in my head and I could do them, for me, it was brilliant. So you know what? When it's all over, you'll reread it again without any preconceived notion.
And judge
it. I have a different feeling about it. In fact, I see that a lot happening to me lately. There's a lot of, even on Newsarama, you know, a lot of guys go, hey, I just read House of M recently, and you know what? And they have a better feeling for it. And not being so rugged up on whatever the anti-Hawkeye hysteria was or whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that you might have the same feeling.
The only thing in taking Mark Miller completely out of the equation, it sounds to, for me, the politics always seemed, especially the way it was presented at cons, that you would see more of a reason, a justification for the pro-registration side, and maybe see a few more scenes of them as a group doing good and really like catching some bad guys.
I think that it's
okay.
Funny, and this is the funny part of it, is that there has been an immense amount of time being spent, especially in Frontline, with just that. But if you're kind of angling towards whatever side you're angling towards, you kind of only see what you want to see.
Okay, because I'm reading Frontline, and frankly, I don't know where those scenes were, where the pro-registration group really, like, you know, does this big, like, save or whatever. You know, even in The Return, which I didn't mind. And I could care less why Captain Marvel's back. That's cool. And I don't mind a Man Out of Time thing. That's fine. But it was like, what? You know, like, show a guy who believes in this doing something and stopping a real tragedy from happening and saying, see, this is why we need this. This is why this is necessary.
It ain't over yet.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I mean, honestly, I know
no,
about
right,
four
man.
Or five things that I guess you guys haven't seen yet that I literally saw like 6 months ago, and I'm like, that ship? I can't remember if that's...
No, that's cool. I know. And what you said is absolutely true. You know, we do have preconceived notions of where we think a story is going.
Yeah, no, it was happening to me, too. I remember I couldn't even enjoy... Here comes Scorsese again. I was so excited about Goodfellas when it came out
mm-hmm.
that I couldn't even enjoy it the first time I saw it. Like, I was so psyched, you know?
Sure.
So I totally know that feeling about certain comics and certain movies.
Yeah.
And then when you get them, you don't even know where your head's at because you're just, you know. But I do think that you can definitely sit back and read Civil War, and I definitely think it's going to be Mark's, you know, high moment as a creator and all kind of, it'll be the thing he's always known for. And listen, I got, you know, I do have an epilogue book coming out called The Confession with Alex, and it, hard to imagine from the title, but it is very much about repercussions of actions and things that hopefully will answer some questions that, you know, maybe you'll dig.
How much of that did, as far as plotting that, was you and Mark going over things and like, was there a lot of, hey, this is as far as I'm going with Civil War up to 7, and we need another book to explain things?
No, there was a couple of instances about the story that we had all discussed that never seemed to make it to print in anybody's book, including mine.
And, okay.
You know, it was a couple of beats that we all knew about the characters. And I said, you know, and it was being represented again as a retreat, and I said, boy, you know, we've never actually said that in print. You know, that, you know, it's a pretty big thing, and I got stuck with it.
Okay.
I talked myself into a gig. I had no intention of writing it, but it does need to be said, and it's characters that I am writing for the foreseeable future, and Mark is, you know, done, so it was my book to write, so.
Okay.
Yeah.
So does that become part of the Civil War trade? I mean, is there
I don't know. I think Mark and Steve's work should be the Civil War trade.
It
becomes more like a prologue, or I don't know. To include it in Civil War would be not fair to Mark and Steve. It's their book, and
I understand.
They don't need to be sharing the royalties.
Okay. People. Yeah, and that's the business end of it.
I didn't want the day after in the House of M trade. You know what I mean? It's someone else's story, and let them get their own.
Oh, yeah, I don't even mean it from a business. I guess I don't mean it from a business.
From a business standpoint, it's not fair, and from it can go in front of Mighty Avengers in the trade or something. It'll or New Avengers or Thunderbolts or wherever it goes.
All right. As a Marvel icon zombie, what current book am I criminally negligent for skipping over? DC, Dark Horse, indie, or otherwise. So they want you to pimp somebody from the competition.
Pimp someone from the competition. Nightly News.
Dan Hickman's book is really cool. I love that book.
Yeah, it's that. I just read Mr. O and Mr. I from Lewis. I'm going to pronounce his name wrong. The fuck is it? Where is it? God damn it. I can't find it.
Mr. O and Mr. I. Okay.
I just read Modern Masters, Volume 10, Kevin Maguire, which was very interesting because there's a lot of projects he never finished. And I didn't realize it. You see them all talked about in a row. You go, he didn't finish any of these. So it's a very interesting thing.
Did it cover his work on the Tower characters?
Yes.
Wasn't that cool for Penthouse? Isn't that hilarious?
It covers everything. I
would imagine it would, yeah.
Yeah.
No, he's great. I'm a big fan. What are you guys working on?
I love the Modern Masters and everything Tomorrow put them.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, Ringo's one was really good, too.
Yeah, no, it was. Yeah.
So, Nihilus? Is that how he say it?
Yeah.
What 80s comic is it that Sauron breathes fire?
Avengers 217.
Thank you. That's 10 points.
I lied. He asked us every...
Does he really?
Yeah.
All right, there you go.
I'll tell him.
All right, Nylons. BearPod 91. Hey, Bevis, what's your opinion on fan-made comics, and do you think there should be more made? Also, and I'm assuming... Now, that's interesting. Do you think that fan comics give fans a chance to actually become a real big industry comic writer or an artist? And, you know, I thought I asked about that and said...
Now, is he asking about people making their own comics or, like, fan fiction comics?
I'm assuming fan fiction. And, BearPod, I asked you even in an instant message and said, hey, man, clarify that, because I don't think we're going to know what the hell you're talking about.
Well, either one, anything that's something creative, that's, you know what I mean? As long as they're not screwing someone's copyright, it's awesome, you know? But
okay.
Yeah, no, we need people to make comics, man.
Hey, Devin Grayson got in the biz because she was writing Batman fanfic.
Well, and I didn't know that.
Yeah, and that's before, you know, she turned Batman and Robin, went back to Wortham's Worst Nightmare and had Batman and Robin and all the homosexual things that apparently she has in her new paperback.
Okay.
Sidekick.
All righty then.
Well, it was funny.
Yeah, I'm pro people being creative in any venture whatsoever.
Okay. Mixie. You kill the first Puerto Rican superhero, the White Tiger, poor Hector Ayala, and then you slam Puerto Rico both on your board and then on Word Balloon.
Unrelated incidences.
Why do you continue to punish us for Ricky Martin?
I don't punish you for Ricky Martin. I did kill the White Tiger, but I birthed a new White Tiger into the world.
Yes, you did.
And White Tiger, the first time the White Tiger logo actually is on, you know, the Alito series. So there's that. Then I went to Puerto Rico and was chased by dogs. They were unrelated incidences.
You got your pocket picked at a wedding?
Yeah, that's right.
See, I listen to you. I listen to you. In your opinion, which is the worst superhero movie ever made? Excluding Batman and Robin, which is too obvious.
Why? No. You don't have to exclude it. Batman and Robin.
Yeah.
Not mad at Batman and Robin, because this fucker has duped me into buying it with a Batman box where they said, oh, it's got the best commentary ever. You got to see it. He doesn't apologize.
Schumacher doesn't apologize?
No, it says, like, in the reviews, they go, oh, he apologizes for this. And you know what he says? He goes, I still almost think this is a bad movie.
Oh, God. Although, I have to admit, the number 23 looks kind of interesting.
No.
All right. Well, you're smarter than me, so there you go. Well, I always give Schumacher a little slack because he did a Fresh Air interview where he talked about Batman and Robin and said every third day the executives are coming in with a new toy and saying, we need a scene to put this in.
Uh-huh.
And, okay. And again, I hate the movie, too. Don't get me wrong. Number three, I really enjoyed Rock Swings by Paul Anka.
Is that what's wrong with Alicia Silverstone's performance?
Suit me up, Uncle Alfred. Yeah.
Wow, you did dialogue from the movie.
Well, it's on Turner every, like, fifth day or so.
Yeah.
Much to the chagrin of George Clooney.
Well, Clooney actually makes a very good thing where he said, he made Out of Sight, like, 4 months after he made Batman and Robin.
Really?
Yeah, and he thinks about it a lot. He goes, and he went from the most panned actor in Hollywood to, you know, everyone loved him again. And he goes, am I more talented or less talented? Was I less talented 4 months ago than I was? You know, it's an interesting quandary for a creative person.
Oh, I think,
I mean,
he's
one
still...
day everyone hates you, another everybody loves you. And what did you do differently?
I don't blame Clooney for Batman and Robin. That's not his fault.
Well, clearly that's what he was saying.
But yeah, I mean, yeah, well, exactly. No, and I don't think anyone really blames him, even though he does kiddingly every time, you know, he was being paraded around during the Murrow film.
Yeah.
But anyway, I really enjoyed Rock Swings by Paul Anka that you suggested.
What?
Did I miss this? Is there another album you're currently
enjoying?
What
podcast is this that I was liking TV shows I've never seen and promoting Paul Anka?
Yeah, you're a big Paul Anka guy, aren't you?
I think they think I'm Brian K. Vaughan. I'll talk like this. I'm leaving comics.
Have you ever gotten a perk or special treatment outside of the comic industry for just being Bennis? You just talked about screeners.
Yeah, no, the screeners were big for me, man. My high school friend who we went to movies all the time with, to call him up and say, can you imagine I'm just getting the movies to the house now? It's quite an arc of geekness. It's the highest level.
I respect that. Well, your buddy gave
And the truth is, too, I see when I'm, like, out and about, like, almost everybody recognizes me, but they do have the politeness not to bother me or look at me, and I appreciate that.
Has there ever been a fan that has scared you, other than me, of course?
Oh, well, I just saw your Boom Zacco attack me at the mall. But, no, everyone's cool with me, man. Yeah, honestly. You don't talk shit online, but everyone's really having fun and having a good time when you meet them in person.
What is your favorite munchie?
And also, I'm standing next to David Mack. No one's going to start shit with me. They'll fucking look like your heart and show it to you.
Very true.
My favorite munchie, you know, I go in waves. I do go in waves. This month is Ritz Toasted Chips, Sour Cream, and Onion. Thank you.
Ah.
Yeah.
Have you been watching, you know, we know about Heroes. How about Smallville?
I've never seen one episode of Smallville.
Really? That's...
I don't know why. I've never seen one.
Man, and even when they were up against each other on the Family Network, that and Gilmore Girls, they were
right up to each other. Maybe one day I'll watch them all and love it. I just never caught it, you know.
Now, Mixie asked about the Spider-Man, the MTV Spider-Man cartoon and what went wrong. And he had, I know, Brian, you've covered this in a previous podcast. Can you give us a short, detailed version of what happened?
Can you cut and paste? No,
No.
I wrote the pilot. I was offered the pilot. I wrote it not knowing that made me executive producer of the show. The show was going along. There were way too many cooks in the kitchen. There was too many companies involved.
Mm-hmm.
We would have meetings, like, and as I said in another interview, we had a meeting, and someone from MTV said, hey, why does it have to be a spider? And this was, the movie was coming out. It was like an insane thing to say in a meeting, and then it kind of dawned on me that this was not going to go as well as I had hoped. I kind of just slowly walked out of the room. I never actually quit the show. My wife was pregnant, and I just said, I'm not wasting any more time with this. And I kind of did the professional version of putting your hands in your pockets and whistling as you slowly walk out the room.
Yeah. Feats, do your stuff.
I just stopped being at meetings, and I don't know.
Well, and Mixie, Brian does go into detail on this on an earlier Bendis Tapes podcast.
Yeah,
so.
I have the highest hopes for it, and I don't in any way discount. Some of the episodes are really great, and the animators killed themselves, and producer Adu Patton, who's going on to features, excellent producer and should be applauded for what he did with no money.
I think it's an excellent cartoon and definitely worthy of a DVD purchase, and honestly,
it's worth a peek.
I haven't
looked at it since it came out, but, you know.
Well, I liked it. But
I like when my name fills up the screen.
That's a good part.
Three names. You really picked up the whole screen. It's awesome.
Have you ever recommended indie books to Marvel or other publishers for recruitment?
All the time.
Are you enjoying any indie books lately? And if so, which?
I mentioned a couple.
Will comics eventually become just graphic novels?
No. The business model just isn't there. It's just not. It's just, you know, it's a profit game. I hate to be so crass, but it is. And if you want to make money in it, it's like, you know, I know that some movies are being put out now on DVD instead of putting them in theaters, just because it's expensive to put theaters. But it is kind of like making a $100 million movie and not putting it in theaters first. I mean, why wouldn't you?
No, I understand, but I and maybe I'm wrong.
No, I mean, some publishers do it, and I think that I think in some instances, I mean, sometimes story has to come first, like Baghdad, Brian K. Vaughan.
Yeah, Pride of Baghdad, sure.
But there's other instances where I think you're spite in your face. You know what I mean? I don't think the 49ers could have been a miniseries and made more money for the creative team.
No, I understand that. What I was going to say, though, is the 22-page comic is going to either go down to 14 pages or go...
No, I actually think it might be going in another direction.
Good.
Hours may be going in another direction, maybe more pages.
Really?
Or issues. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, good, because honestly, I...
Not everything has to be 22 pages. In fact, the whole time Powers has been in production, it hasn't been 22 pages.
That's true.
And sometimes to our frustration. So... The format itself, though, works for mainstream comics, and that's what it's got to be. Not everything has to be that. So, but at the same time, there's certain formats that retail community just will not support on a scale that will make it good for the publisher.
And I understand.
A lot of formats that are, if they're off size, they will just not be ordered.
Well, I understand that. I don't know, we always think, you know, maybe we've hit the ceiling, and is anyone going to pay $3 for a comic? Is anyone going to pay $4 for a comic, $5 for a comic? And it just, you know, I guess whatever
is... What are you going to get for that $3?
Exactly, $4? Exactly.
That's the one I'm talking about.
No, and I appreciate that, and I agree.
Yeah, and that's where Powers is headed, maybe, that it's a little bit more, but you're going to get a lot more for it.
Flipped P. I have been reading Ultimate Spider-Man in the hardcover format. I just read Volume 7 after Christmas and loved the Warriors Act.
Thank you.
The humor in that arc was brilliant.
Thank you.
Are you planning on incorporating some of that humor into any other titles you're going to be writing?
No.
Okay.
No, that was it for me, humor phase. I'm done with that.
Yes.
Now,
good banner exchange.
That issue of Ultimate Spider-Man, issue 106, starts the Knights arc, which is right out of the Warriors arc.
Oh, cool.
Daredevil putting together a little group of guys specifically to take down the Kingpin.
Very cool.
Will they? How will they? Who will they be?
We don't know.
I don't know. Well, I know, but you know.
You know, yeah, exactly. What is your opinion of the irredeemable Ant-Man? I love it when comics can pull off funny and not be cheesy.
This is true. And I believe that Robert Kirkman is the greatest comic writer probably ever. Probably better than Stanley and Alan Moore put together. If Alan Moore and Stanley had a baby, we'd be lucky with half of what Robert Kirkman is right now.
Wow. Yeah. And he kind of fits that DNA. Yikes. Yikes.
Well, he's from Kentucky.
Well, there you go. The Weekly World News cover. I can see it now.
Robert listens to these podcasts and gets very upset.
Does he really?
Yes, he does.
Kirkman, I love you, man.
I get a call after every podcast.
I owe you the biggest of apologies, Kirkman, because I've never had you on Word Balloon, and every time I want to, another podcaster is quicker and smarter and gets you, and I always feel like, shit, I got to wait another couple months before I bug you again. So if you are listening, I'm a huge fan, and someday I will sit down with you and have a wonderful chat.
If he does do your show, ask him to wear the tie he wore to the award.
I watched that. We talked about that.
All right, I know. It's an ongoing thing.
Ben Weldon, what's the best movie you've seen so far in
2007? 2007? Well, I saw The Queen in 2007, but that had to be the best movie I've seen this year. Jesus Christ. I don't know. I just don't know.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of the last 8 weeks. Oh, you know what I loved? Did you see The Good Shepherd?
I want to. No, I haven't seen it. I saw The Good German, and I loved it.
Oh, really
about
good.
Being an apologist. This is what I'm going to get shit for. I loved it, The Good German.
I missed that in the theaters, and I figured I'd see it on DVD.
Me and Soderbergh are the only people saw it in the theater.
Cool.
It was like $80,000 total.
Well, yeah, I mean, it came to Chicago, but very briefly, you know.
Yeah. I was in New York, and it was playing at the Angelica.
Oh, very nice.
Said, fuck it, I'm going. And I went. I loved it.
How IFC of you.
Yeah, I know. I just thought, woo.
All right, DS9. Hello, Mr. Bendis, an Illuminati.
Hello, DS9, the most polite man on the board. Can you imagine a guy coming into your home and speaking the way he does?
He likes me.
You're at dinner and someone's just eating his soup and goes, sucks.
In the Illuminati issue, did the group kill Skrulls when Black Bolt used his powers? If he did, that means Doctor Strange, Reed Richards, and Xavier condone murder, and I thought they were against that.
Yeah, but it's alien murder. It's not real murder.
Yeah, they're Skrulls.
They're Skrulls.
Fuck the Skrulls. Dreg, dear Brian Bendis, the boyishly best.
Who did that answer?
You can give him a real answer if you want.
No, that was it.
All right, fine.
Listen, the Skrulls went to take over the world. They came here, they turned into cows, and they tried to take our children and eat them. Something had to be done. That's the world, baby. They don't condone it. They were pushed too far. Thank you.
All right. And I notice, hey, he's got me like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I'm like 5 in this like list of 6 podcasts. What the hell, Daryl? What the hell?
What's nobody?
I don't know.
Is that another podcast?
I guess so. Yeah, it's Libsyn, so that's a podcast. So Around Comics, great guys.
He doesn't even read my books, and he's on my board all day. So what are you going to do?
I'll be nice and say Around Comics, they're my friends. I'm on that show all the time. They're good guys. I don't know Secret Identity.
They had
to
win some wool for me. All right.
Raging Bullet's a good show.
Same guy.
Is DS9 Winston Wolfe?
Yeah.
Get the hell out of here. Yeah. For real?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Good reveal.
All of you.
Good reveal. I like that, man.
Yeah, I won't tell you who Ronan is.
Dear Brian Bendis, Brain Bendis. By the way, I always love when people do that. Brain. Hello, Brain.
Yes.
When was the last time...
Just like sixth grade, thank you.
When was the last time you said to yourself, I'm not going to have this conversation in public, but then you went ahead and did it anyway?
You're talking about comics or sex?
Oh, there you go.
It's either one of those. That's happened today, I'm sure.
Other than Powers, do you see another flagship title emerging for the Icon imprint?
I don't think Powers is a flagship title. I think they're...
Criminal's good.
Yeah, Criminal's good. They're all good. I mean, they're all fantastic. Yeah. It's not a line, per se. It's a collection of very carefully put together comics, though. So.
And forgive me, I'm trying to think of what else is currently coming out of Icon.
Kabuki,
of course. Sorry,
and
David.
And JMS's Dream Police.
Yeah, that's a one-shot, isn't it?
Kirby's Estate has a book that comes out.
Galactic Bounty Hunters.
That's right, there you go.
All right. Which company, mainstream or fringe, do you think has become the best place for new writers to cut their teeth? Or do you believe that the best way for new writers to cut their teeth is to get out there and self-publish their own titles?
Either way, baby, there's no wrong answer. Just find a situation that you feel comfortable with hopefully you surround yourself with like-minded people like yourself. That's what happened to me at Caliber. I met all my friends there, all people we all felt the same thing about comics. and we're doing them differently, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And do what you got to do, man. This is the hard part about a creative field. There's no right answer. There's no way to, okay, if you do this, this, and this, you get to be this. You know, you gotta do it and be as creative trying to make your career start as you are in the work that you're doing.
By the by, I was exposed to more Caliber stuff because Joe Pruitt in Desperado mm-hmm. is putting out a bunch of the old stuff
mm-hmm.
in trade form, mm-hmm. and I am blown away with a lot of this stuff.
Telling you, the books that were coming out of there were something else. A lot of great artists, a lot of people still my friends, you know.
Sure.
People I'm still working with.
When creating a new comic universe, which is the best way to expand it? Start with a single title, introduce new characters within that title, and then spin them off into their own series, or start with multiple titles, and then connect them later on through cameos and crossovers?
I don't know. I've never created a comic book universe, other than, I guess, Powers and Jinx kind of are, but I've never looked at them that way. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
They're all in a fictional world. I think the best way is to do a single title and do it inside that title. I remember in the heyday of the 90s, when everyone was getting greedy and horny, there was a couple of people who I won't name that announced their lines and said, this is the first six titles of our 36 titles, which will debut in the next 4 months. And when you say stuff like that, people go, you know, dude, that's a lot of, you know, you're asking for a lot of commitment.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't even know if I like it or you or whatever the fuck this is, you know, so let me do one. You can do your one title, and if people like it, and you think you got something to expand, but, you know, there you go.
And do you still bake biscuits? If so, have you outgrown the halcyon days of boyishly bashful baking and taking a more emotionally detached?
Total sellout, and which described my days at McDonald's.
That's right.
Which I was boyish, bashful, fine, but Mr. Biscuit Baker. This is true, and no. But I still get the shakes every time I walk by at McDonald's.
Well, she called.
Yeah.
Hey, Bendis, Sentry versus Thor. Please make it happen.
I hope it would happen.
I hope Thor kills that bitch.
Yeah.
Two, any plans working with these guys anytime soon?
What?
Any planes working with these guys anytime soon?
You know you're in trouble when I'm mocking your spelling.
Steve McNiven?
I worked with Steve McNiven, and I had an amazing time working with Steve. And when he shakes off the sillies in Civil War and decides what he wants to do, which I'm sure will be one person talking to another person and not a group. I'll see if I have time. But, yeah, I'll work with Steve again. He's a gentleman. He was a great to work with.
David Finch?
David Finch and I have had recent discussions, and I believe a reunion is in the future.
Gabriel Del Odo?
Gabriel Del Odo I would work with again, too. I wouldn't solicit it until it's done. But I'll see him in a couple of weeks, and we'll see what's on his mind.
The Luna Brothers.
Yes.
Big fans.
Yes.
I love those guys.
And part of my Xbox group there. We talk often.
Now, is it Olivier Coppiel or Oliver Coppiel?
Olivier Coppiel.
And?
The answer is absolutely 1,000% yes. He's never let me down.
And we all love him, Michael
I love
Gaines.
Him, and I know what to do with him next. I know there's somewhere he's taking his art, and I want to help. I want to be there with him.
Okay, and I do love Coppiel, but I was talking about Gatos because I'm a huge Michael Gatos fan.
I'm a gigantic Michael Gatos fan, and Michael Gatos and I just were in the latest Batman trade. Pretty funny. They put
yes.
out Batman Greatest Stories Ever, Volume 2, and for some reason, our ridiculous little story, Citizen Wayne, Elseworlds.
Mm-hmm.
Get it? Citizen Wayne? Instead of Citizen Kane, it's Citizen Wayne. So that's in there if you want to see a little Gatos that not a lot of people saw when it was originally published. It just got published last week, so. But yeah, we'll work together again. The things I'm working on right now are inappropriate for him, but certainly I will work with him again. And I am working towards sometime doing some Jessica Jones specials. So
very cool.
Definitely do it.
The one man that can capture Jessica Jones' smile.
Yep. Well, it's his wife's smile, so.
There you go.
Yeah.
Any opinions about The Simpsons? Are you excited about the movie?
I haven't watched in a few years, but I am excited about the movie. I happen to have a soft spot in my heart for movies based on TV shows that are still on the air. So, and, you know, I love the Kids in the Hall movie. I love the
yeah, me too.
Mystery Science Theater movie.
True.
And I kind of know a couple of guys who are working on some CGI stuff. You saw the trailer. There's some CGI in it.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, I know the guys that made that, and they showed me some stuff that looked pretty awesome.
The footage they had in San Diego, and literally we're talking about 3 different minutes, 1 minute each, looked great.
Like, I like the X-Files movie, and I don't think I've seen an episode of the X-Files.
Oh, the X-Files movie was good. And
yeah,
they,
but
yeah,
by the way, and I just saw it, like, it was on its cable for, like, 10 minutes, and I saw, like, 5 minutes of it, and I was like, they don't hold up. There's bees!
Juggernaut. Hey, hello, Senor Bendis. Hello, Senor Bendis. From Yonkers. What characters in Mighty Avengers have you started writing about that at first you weren't unsure about, but have grown fond of?
I was pretty sure, you know, this is not to be cocky. I did get to pick this team, so it was people I had a good feel for, or I wouldn't have put another team, you know, why do that to myself? But having had a lot of people read Mighty Avengers so far, the reaction to Ares has been a lot of fun. So I'm excited for people to see Ares in the group dynamic.
Cool.
He kind of, it's a little like Namor in the Illuminati, where he's just the a-hole in the group, but what he's saying is not wrong. He's just being an a-hole about it, so it's a lot of fun to write him.
Very cool.
Yeah.
And for those of us keeping score at home, Mighty Avengers starts after Civil War VII, so do you...
We got many issues in the can. Mighty Avengers is colored, I think it might be after printer, so I don't, maybe it's March?
I was going to say, if it is March, April, I wasn't sure which.
Yeah, I think it's March.
Okay.
But it will ship on time.
Will the Void persona of the century make an appearance to haunt the Mighty Avengers?
Of course. What? Maybe.
What comics in Marvel have you been able to read and keep up to date with that you are enjoying?
Iron Fist.
Yeah, no shit. Yeah. Outstanding.
Yep.
Brew and Fraction are doing a great job.
Set out for Punisher War General.
Yeah, with Fraction.
I like.
He's a funny man. Last question, is Mike Carey as smart as he seems?
No. No, he's actually a very intelligent guy.
Is he based in the U.S. or is he in England?
I think he's in England. I've only seen him at Marvel Retreats. I don't know him that well, but he does have a lot of lofty ideas as his books have in them.
I would really...
He talks the way he writes. He's very lofty and sincere. And, yeah.
I'd like to have him on a word balloon sometime.
All right.
As always, I wish you and your... this is great. This is, as always, I wish you well in your future endeavors and hope that Mighty Avengers has the level of success...
It's a masculine Avengers.
Exactly.
Thank you, man. Thank you, David.
Thank you, Luca Brasi. Exactly. It's a masculine New Avengers. Outstanding, man. All right. That was good. B. Gorski. Hello again. Mr. Bendis, do you ever paint? If so, what type of paint?
I actually paint every day. I got a kid. We're painting little happy faces all the time.
So watercolors mostly?
Yeah.
All right. Very nice. Yeah. Your favorite?
Finger painting. That's not like it's finger painting.
That's true. Your favorite Mammoth film? Can you pick
well,
one?
Well, probably House of Games, because it meant the most to me, but I do really like Spartan a lot.
Yeah, I like both of those as well.
Yeah, I mean, I know Spartan's a better movie. I mean, he's gotten better as he's gone on, and I like State and Main a lot, too. State and Main hits.
I love State and Main, very funny. But yeah, I agree with you. House of Games still has
that.
That's
a great Philip Seymour Hoffman and a great Alec Baldwin performance.
Oh,
killer,
yeah.
Alec Baldwin performance.
I'm just finishing reading Richard Price's Clockers.
Cool.
In your opinion, which of his books should I read next? These are good questions.
Yeah, my favorite is Ladies Man, which turned into Sea of Love. He kind of took the Ladies Man.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's funny. It's just Ladies Man is a book with no plot about what it's like to be lonely in New York City and do, like, you know, put ads in papers and go on dates with people you don't know and how creepy it is and, you know, whacking off in public and all this kind of creepy stuff. And he took all that and then put it into this serial killer plot. For Sheer Love, so it's kind of an interesting precursor to that.
Well, that's cool.
Actually, I know what, there's a 3 screenplays by Richard Price book that I adore, which has got Sea of Love and Color Money and I think Life Lessons, the Scorsese movie.
Mm-hmm. From
I recommend that. I mean, I love reading screenplays, and he writes great ones. So
yeah, that's New York Stories. That was the Scorsese piece of New York Stories.
Yeah.
What's your email address? I'm not sure if you're getting
those. Brian1138 at AOL, or you can hit me through MySpace. Not a secret.
DS9 is back. What is the biggest misconception comic fans have about you and Marvel Comics?
Well, I hate to say it's the biggest, because clearly not everyone feels this way, but the one that baffles me the most, and I think the DS9 is very guilty of this, from what I've seen on the post on my board, is that there is a conspiracy against the readers, or some kind of contempt for the readers on some level. Like, we're all sitting in a room going, yeah, we'll get you with this one, and putting the screws to you, and boy, I mean, it is so the opposite of what really goes on, and there's no way to prove it, but, I mean, can you imagine that, why would you buy one book from Marvel or from anybody who you thought felt that way towards you? It's beyond me, but we have such unbelievable passion and compassion for the characters, and I think the one thing that connects, I mean, you couldn't find a group of guys more different than me and Mark and Loeb and Straczynski and Joe and Paul and Ed. We're completely different animals, but the one thing that connects us is this passion plus the overwhelming guilt of that someone's going to spend money with something with our name on it and how important that is to us. And whenever once in a while you see someone throw out some accusation about, well, they're just trying to screw us over, and I'm like, wow, man, that's weird that you, I mean, it's insane to me that someone would even think that. I mean, it's one thing if you don't appreciate the work, it's all subjective and whatever, but the other thing is accusation of contempt that does not exist. I even like DS9. I love he comes on, I was goofing on him before, I love he comes on the board and starts shit all the time. I just wish he was more loquacious about it instead of just going, sucks, you know. I want more of a thought than hate it, you know, but that's that.
Todd Kearns, Benny Wemma Demma Ding Dong. It's Todd Kearns again asking you to crack an egg of knowledge all over my face.
Ew.
Since you're a writer, when you watch a film, read a novel, etc., do you find that it's hard to not analyze the writing process, script, dialogue, etc., and just enjoy said art? Or do you continually become disconnected to whatever form of media you're absorbing as you pick it apart in your head?
If you're watching something great, you'll get lost in it.
Sure.
No matter what. And every once in a while, it's fun to pick out the act breaks, because a lot of mainstream films have very distinct act breaks. Like you were talking about that X-Files movie,
mm-hmm.
where, if you remember, and this is such a weird thing to say, but in the X-Files movie, the smoking man's car explodes.
Yes.
End of act. You know, and then the next scene, he's in Antarctica or something, and it's just a funny act break, and like the Matrix movie has it too, where they go, welcome to the world, and you're like, okay, act two, you know.
Right, right.
I can't help but point out those acts that kind of do, like, when I don't see them or can't find them, but they're there, that's kind of better. But, you know, it's just, you can't help it, man, you know what I mean?
Sure.
What I like is when you see, it's like when comedians never laugh at other comics, they just point to it and go funny, because they acknowledge
right.
that it's funny, and it's kind of the same thing when you're reading a comic or a movie and you just see something well produced, and you point to it and go, good, well done, or you're just impressed with it and wish you would have thought of it, and kind of thing like that, but, you know, it's nothing that takes you out of it. But I guess that you're talking about, like, maybe like when you were in the hands of a master like Scorsese, where you're so excited that you got to see it a few times just to sit back and enjoy it. So,
do you do that with movies you don't like as well, or is it once is enough?
Yeah, well, as I get older, the once seems to be enough. Like, I don't need to see Crawl again to remember why I hate it.
No, wait, I got to find that signpost. Act two.
But you can learn from a shitty movie, too.
Sure,
I mean,
yeah.
Some movies are just so shitty that there's nothing to learn. I mean, the shit, and I knew that. But, you know, when you see a bad movie from a good, you know, or a good or a bad comic from someone's good, and you can really analyze and try to find out what went wrong. You know, not to disrespect the guy, but, you know, there's lessons to learn, and you'd be arrogant not to take the time to try to learn them. You know, with work you do too. You know, you've got to analyze it.
Number two, what music are we rocking lately?
There's a new Propellers EP I got, and Propeller Heads. Propeller Heads.
Propeller Heads, yeah.
And I liked Lily Allen, but somehow I didn't like her when I saw her in Saturday Night Live. I liked it before I saw her in Saturday Night Live. What else am I listening to? I was on the last walk yesterday and really enjoyed it.
Oh, you bet.
I think it better than that.
If I hook you up with a demo of my band's music, would you listen? Because that would be the coolest thing ever.
Yes.
Why are you so awesome?
Baby genetics. Can't help it.
Prince or Madonna?
Now Prince.
Yeah. If you had to wear one superhero's spandex, which costume would it be? Come on.
Not answering. It's one of those trick questions that haunts me. And then Johnny Z does it Photoshop.
That's true.
Stupid. That's why I'm awesome, because I can see through this.
Very good. Do you enjoy writing superheroes more, or your more grounded norm work?
Equally. It's all writing I'm very passionate about.
You stated
I'm not a genre snob. I love it.
Yes. I know you've stated in a previous Q&A that you would one day write an X-book, so asking about that would be fruitless. However, I never heard you pontificate on the finer nuances of the mutants and what you find so special about them. Honestly, I don't have a clue on how Bendis perceives this part of the Marvel Universe, so how do you feel about the X-Men? Are they vital to Marvel? Do you enjoy the franchise? Your thoughts?
No, I'm a big fan of well-produced, great mutant titles of all shapes and sizes, and I do have thoughts about what the X-Books could be one day or will maybe be one day, and they're not far off from what Joss Whedon's thoughts are and how he's producing his books. And, I do think, you know, less people on the team and focus on what inherently it is to be different and not lose sight of what that is really what the books should and are always great when they're about that. And I think I know a lot of what Ed's got planned, and I know it's going to be that. So I'm pretty excited about that.
Gambit, awesome, or Walking Stereotype?
I like Gambit.
Who in your
theory?
In theory,
yeah.
John Drake, Bendis. Who in your opinion was the breakout artist and writer of 2006?
Breakout.
I'd say Frank.
Well, I know that Ed's like perceived as the breakout, but Ed's been this great for a long time.
Sure.
So I think audience breakout, it would be Ed. But that, you know, it's kind of like, it's annoying. Like, I remember a couple of years in a row, Alex got nominated for Breakout Artist at the Wizard Awards, and it was really annoyed the shit out of him. Because he'd been making comics for like 10 years and already had like 4 Eisners, and he's
sure.
Like, what the fuck? Where am I breaking out from? You know, what do I got to do?
Well, that's like some of the young guns that are in their 40s and stuff. And it's like, yeah, what the
exactly.
Hell are you doing, man?
So Ed definitely had a great year because it's nice to have as many people acknowledge what he's doing is great as it should be. And
for
06, I do think it was O'Neill Yu. And I know he only had the one issue out, but I think it was an issue that really showed an artist come from one kind of artist to another kind of artist. And showed the promise of what's going to happen next year. And I actually think that 2007 is Frank Cho's year.
Hands
down. I don't think anyone's going to touch him.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I've
now seen over 100 pages of New Avengers, of Mighty Avengers art, and there's not a panel that isn't Dave Stevens perfect.
Would you say you have a large female fan base? Seriously, the two writers my girlfriend follows most of the time are you and Slott. I have no idea why. Well, you both rock, but I don't know what it is specifically. Maybe it has something to do with you being an old softy. Are you an old softy?
I do have a higher amount of female readers than you'd think. And I actually think it comes from Jessica and Dina.
Sure.
There's a contingent of female comic readers that don't necessarily want to read, you know, manga or Strange in Paradise, and they actually kind of like more action-oriented fare, and but at the same time, don't want to be insulted. You know, they want complex, you know, characters, and I know that both me and Brian K. Vaughan seem to have a lot of crossover in the female audience department, which we both really like. So, I appreciate that. I don't tend to focus on it because I think you can focus on it. It's a little sexist. I mean, a reader's a reader. I don't care what, you know
sure.
what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah, you're not writing with one
yeah,
sex.
Yeah, I'm writing, I'm trying, you know, I'm not, but, and I think that attitude is what has kept them coming to books. I mean, even, I've enjoyed the debates between by Kitty and MJ that seem to generate a lot of female readership, too. So that I enjoyed as well.
Very cool.
Yeah.
The sentient Xbox. Howdy, Mr. Bendis. Quick question. What defines a comic character to you? Is it the potential of a character, or what has been previously written about the character?
Both. In equal parts.
G101.
Just like people in real life.
Sure.
Not, you know, I love you for the man you are and the man you own, or whatever it was. Jerry Maguire reference I couldn't get through.
I heard you. Yeah. You had me at hello. G101, it's time to play Ultimate Debut. Just indicate yes or no if you plans to ultimize the following.
Indeed.
Chameleon.
Yes.
Matt Gargan.
No.
Roderick Kingsley.
Maybe.
Smythe, either Spencer or Alistair.
Yeah, I know, no.
Cat Farrell.
Don't need it, because we still got Betty Brant running around. And I don't know what purpose Cat would serve.
Okay. Mysterio.
Yes. I've had a Mysterio in my pocket for, like, the whole run.
Wear a long raincoat. Quentin Beck.
Yeah.
Are we going to see more of the Ultimate Bugle staff? We haven't seen much of them apart from Beck.
Next issue, 106.
Would you like to work?
But he missed a lot of days of work in the fun saga, so still have to answer for it.
Now, this is interesting. Would you like to work with Tim Sale? I think his art style would suit your work.
I would.
Sure.
Yeah, I would. It's still one of my favorite comics of all time is Challenges of the Unknown, which he did with Loeb.
Oh, yeah.
Many years ago, and I was happily wrote the introduction for.
Yes.
It's still the best, like, design, panel design of seeing the comics that wasn't Eisner.
And he's doing great work on Heroes.
Yep.
Everyone's discovering Tim Sale now.
Yeah, I know. I don't know if, he might have been priced out of my league now with Heroes, but.
Dr. Cat Claps. Hey, everybody.
And now that Loeb grabbed Alex for hero stuff, I might have to try to steal his girlfriend.
Dr. Cat Claps. Hey, everybody. In the last podcast, we discovered how...
You said Cat Claps twice without even, like, smiling.
I gave him the Yiddish Dr. Cat Claps.
Yes.
In the last podcast, we discovered how poorly read you were. So, so my question is, what the hell have you read? Any good novels or nonfiction books you can plug?
Comic books. I read Blue Blood by Edward Conlin. I read Dandy vs. Godzilla by...
Mammoth.
Yeah, I read Tales of Stars by Ronan Rowe. I read Clockers by Richard Price. Python's on Python. Still one of my favorite books. Life in New York, the semi-live biography.
Was that Tom Shales?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. No, not Tom Shales. Is it Tom Shales?
Wasn't that the one with the all the cast members?
Yeah. Was that Tom Shales?
I thought it was Tom Shales.
Fucking great book that is.
Yeah?
Yeah. That's a lot of books.
You bet. Have you ever read Joseph Campbell's The Hero with a Thousand Faces?
Yes, I have.
What are you?
How about that? Cool. And I just bought the two new DVDs just came out.
Is it the Moyers interviews with him?
No, they're new things. I have them right here. I haven't watched them yet, but I got them, and that's important. I got... One's called Hero's Journey, and one's called Sukhavati.
And they're new.
And they're brand new, just came out last week. I have no idea what they are, so I don't know why I'm plugging them.
Okay. Because, yeah, I love them.
I figure out how smart I am.
I love the Moyers interviews with
them. Yeah, no, I have those too.
What are your thoughts on his theories of myths?
They're a big part of a couple of things I've done, including the Forever arc and Powers. I wish more superhero mainstream writers should embrace his work and consider it.
Have you watched Battlestar Galactica yet?
Yes, I'm all caught up and I love it!
Isn't that a great show?
Not one bad episode.
Yeah, I completely agree.
Absolutely love it.
Do you see why we were all on you for not watching this episode?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a tool. And my girlfriend in college looked just like Starbuck to the point where it's kind of creepy.
Wow.
Yeah, it's like weird.
I dated a girl who looked like former playmate Erica Eleniak.
No one believes you.
But it's true.
Okay.
And Olivia Newton-John.
Shut up.
I swear.
Now I know how stupid I just said.
Stack of fucking Bibles. I know. There you go. We all know that you read comics on the toilet, but have you ever read comics while having diarrhea?
Yeah, and I even discussed this in my Power Script book. You know, sometimes you'll be reading something and having diarrhea and then not like somehow
right.
not like the book anymore because you associate your bad tummy with reading that book. So, and then you can, and like as an author, I can put all my heart and soul into a book. You have a bad shrimp and, you know, you hate me.
Right.
Go on these rambles and tell me what I said.
And that doesn't make me uncomfortable, Doctor.
Yes.
We talked about Brian's blue poop from canned chocolate pudding. Yikes.
I told my daughter that last week.
I told a friend about that a couple weeks ago. Yeah. I'm like, you know what happened to a guy I know? Blue pudding, blue crap out of canned pudding. Enjoy. I know you guys make fun of it a lot, but you have to admit that Jim Steranko's Mr. T cover is pretty cool, right? It was.
No, it was not.
Oh, come on.
I want Steranko to do something.
Well, yeah, you're thinking like a pro, but
Steranko level. I got a... I know what I watched? For Prairie Home Companion. What a surprise that was. It really is good. And Lindsay Lohan's really good in it.
Albin's last film.
Did you see it?
I still have not seen it. No.
It's really good. It's a really good Albin movie, and it's an excellent, like, last film. And not that Steranko's ill or old or anything like that, but it made me angry that he doesn't do more. It did. I did. I almost wrote him a letter and decided it's not because he's not going to work with me. If you have the tools in which to create and you're not, it upsets me.
I understand.
Yeah. So.
No, I understand. I remember seeing it last year at New York and thinking, wow, I can't believe it. The two shouldn't be in the same sentence, but it is pretty fucking cool.
What?
The cover, the actual cover that he did of the Mr. T thing.
Stop it.
I'm just saying. Well, you said both
you
of us. You
rented Indiana Jones. You shouldn't be doing Mr. T covers.
I understand.
Okay. Now I'm yelling for no reason.
No, that's all right.
Okay.
It's because you care.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, man, this Joe doesn't care.
Or I'm full of sugar. One of the two.
One of the two. Joe doesn't care asks, you said in the past that you were a little nervous about Civil War and how it would affect things you had going in your books. Now that it's almost over, can you give us a better idea of some of the worries you had about Civil War in regards to your books?
I don't remember saying I was worried. I mean, any worry I would have had is, it's just gonna, you know, not writing it's not in your control, and if Mark would have effed it up, you know, it wouldn't have done well for any of us, you know. But I had the same worry about when I was doing House, you know. So, but he didn't, and I that worry was fleeting, if anything. I don't remember saying I was worried.
Joe, he already asked your
But I'm pretty good. I'm pretty...
You're all right with it?
Yeah. I'm okay now. I'm fine.
You've said what you're playing on Xbox 360 right now?
Yeah.
Superman 2, the Donner Cut. Thumbs up, thumbs down.
I've not watched it. I do own it, and I will watch it. I might bring it to Italy with me. The reviews from my friends are so drastic. I love it, I hate it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, I have some friends that really can't stand it, and other people who really liked it, so
I'm in the love it category.
I'll check it, man.
It almost redeems parts of Superman Returns. Almost.
I like Superman Returns.
Well, there you go.
It's decompressed and nothing happened.
But, no, Brando was absolutely missing in Superman 2, and now we know why. And it's an incomplete movie, but, you know, if you just take it as a guide to where Donner probably was going, this is
yeah,
right.
I am interested in from a storytelling point of view.
From a filmmaking standpoint, you're going to love it. And I would highly recommend listening to him and Mankiewicz on the commentary as well.
That's cool. I will.
And I didn't even know Mankiewicz was one of the scriptwriters, because I love
They wrote it all together. It was one big giant script. It's like a 500-page script they wrote.
Yeah, that I knew, but I didn't know he was one of the writers, because I always associate Tom Mankiewicz with all the Bond films.
No. He's on the commentary for the first Superman, too, from a couple years ago.
There you go. Without knowing it, who gets killed in Amazing Spider-Man 538? I'm settling for the over-under for their return 2.5 years later. Are you taking the over-under?
Without knowing who it is gets killed, he's already betting their...
So if it's either Aunt May or MJ, that they're going to be back in 2.5 years. Do you think that's it's going to take more than that or less than that?
I'm going to take the over.
Okay.
I don't know.
I saw online that the Steve McNiven pages of Civil War where Spider-Man reveals his identity are on sale for a minimum of $7,500. Do you think it's almost like playing with the stock market for these pages, since all Marvel has to do is retcon the story and poof?
He's right there. Look at this guy. He's full of angst that he's being screwed over.
I'm being fucked as I'm reading
things
this.
That haven't happened yet. He doesn't know what's going to happen, but it's already being retconned, and Marvel's already screwing
him. I'm already fucked.
Yes. I will tell you, I'm very happy about these. Steve McNiven gave me a couple of pages of Avengers art. I'm very happy I own, if that's what these are going for.
Phil X Machina. Bendis, if you were able to go back in time and give your 20-year-old something self some advice on breaking into comics, what would it be? Or how about life in general?
Life in general, I would say, go ahead and sleep with her. It don't matter. Go ahead. What are you holding out for? Go right ahead. My 20-year-old, and by breaking the couch, I don't know what advice I would give, because it kind of worked out all right, and it kind of worked out when it should have. If I would have broken in earlier, I probably would have fucked it up.
Okay.
And I needed to find who I was, and it took as long as it needed to take, you know?
Yes, I do.
So, I would have done, you the man.
Very cool.
And give myself an awkward hug.
Do you feel that the big two publishers are in danger of losing readers with a constant output of large crossover events?
No. This has been going on since the 60s.
You don't think we're one Atlantis Attacks away from fucking it up again?
We didn't lose them with Atlantis Attacks, and you know.
All right.
If anything was going to do it, it was going to be that.
All right.
But no one left. Listen, there's always ebbs and flows and ups and downs, and you know what I mean?
And by the way, for fairness, one Joker's Last Laugh away, or one Our World's at War.
Thank you.
You know, okay.
But there will be one of these that is just a financial disaster, the likes of which, you know, you know, we rarely see in a lifetime, and it'll probably have my name on it, but and it is nerve-wracking while you're doing it, because there is no... The audience does vote, and no matter how much marketing goes, there are things that do tank and that are highly promoted. But the difference that is happening now, and I'm not saying that it's going to keep going this way, but with the difference that's happened now, more or less, is that the people who are offering these quote-unquote events, which even the name is weird to say, have learned from the past, learned from the mistakes made by Atlantis Attack and Clone Saga and whatever else you can think of that you would deem as something that didn't work, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And we were readers of those books and were just as hurt by them and want to exceed past them just as much as anybody else. So that's why there are lessons to be learned, and they have been learned. So... And again, if the audience will tire of them, they will let us know.
My only concern is that
so far they have not said they're tired of them.
There seem to be breathing periods in between events, and there doesn't seem to be lately. And that's my only concern.
Well, I agree. I agree with that too. And here's the news that they really aren't in a position to control that. And then, you know what I mean? There's no. Like, we can't say to DC, hey, don't do anything for a while because we just finished Civil War. It's not, you know what I mean?
But I'm saying within your own company, though, as well. And in both companies. I mean, that's both companies.
Too, and this is going to sound like company line bullshit, but it really is true. This is how they're even discussed in-house. There's levels of events. There's, you know, there's company-line events, and there's you know, centric mini-line events.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
Like, World War Hulk is a certain level of, to which Civil War is a certain level, and...
Annihilation.
So, I mean, and you don't want, and a lot of it is marketing and books that they're proud of, and, you know, you want to get the word out, and everyone
sure.
deserves their own shake in their own kind of marketing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. I mean,
it's all, it's even that subject is discussed. You know, what's too much, what's too little, what's, you know.
Yeah, because.
But take the event word off of it. It's marketing books you're proud of. It's marketing books. People who want to hear about them, why be shy? But what we really, in those retreats, we really talk about, like, well, why are we making, well, what, why is this being made? And even when Civil War, you've heard the story, but, you know, there was the Civil War retreat was 2 days of near disastrous results, followed by a great last day when Civil War came out of it, and there was 2 days of shitty ideas or ideas that weren't event worthy, if that's the word, where, you know, it would not have worked, kind of thing. So, but then I was proud of that. I was very frustrated because I'm like, oh my god, this is how things like Atlantis Attacks are born.
Right.
And it's happening right now and no one's stopping it. And then what happened was it did stop, and that's the difference.
That'll do it for part one of the winter edition of the Bendis Tapes. Stick around, part two coming up later this week. This episode of Word Balloon has been sponsored by InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com. InStock Trades offers a huge selection of trade paperbacks, hardcovers, essentials, showcases, archives, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more, all at up to 35% off with orders over $50 receiving free shipping. Plus, check out Bendis' Powers and Daredevil trade paperbacks. And don't forget to visit InStock Trades' sister site, Discount Book Service, at DCBService.com. For all your pre-order needs. Major publishers are 40% off, and monthly specials are 45 to 75% off every month. March pre-orders include Bendis' Powers Volume 11 for 50% off, and the first issue of DC's new Countdown Weekly Series for 75% off. Only 74 cents for Countdown number 51. Don't forget, if you enjoy what you hear on WordBalloon.com, do us a favor, write us a positive review at iTunes, Podcast Alley, Podcast Pickle, wherever you can rate or review any of the podcasts that you enjoy. And also go to dig.com, D-I-G-G.com, and give us a vote there. We certainly would appreciate it. It helps spread the word about Word Balloon. Until next time, thanks for listening. This is John Suntress. Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2007.